Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 23rd, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call in number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more, and clicking on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, we're going to start off tonight looking again into God's Word. Last week we were looking at some verses in Matthew 7, and we're going to pick up there. We read through 1 through 13. So we're going to pick up on 14, well, actually 1 through 12. We're going to pick up on verse 13 and read through 29. So Matthew 7, verse 13. "Enter ye in at the strait gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go therein. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are raving wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit, is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many marvelous, wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rains descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 29. I don't know, before we get going, we might, we'll look at the questions later. Let me see, Gary, are you online, and do you have any questions? Because I think I have one here, and we'll get to them in a few minutes, but if you've got any questions, maybe you might want to try to find them. I know you get a copy of whatever questions come into our email. Anyway, we're going to talk just a little bit about the habeas corpus, the status. You know, we have a little over a dozen habeas corpuses that we have filed. A couple of them were filed quite some time ago. And, I think we've been a little bit too premature filing some of the earlier ones, but we were kind of caught in a situation. We had to start to do some things, and we wanted to help a few people, so we did do the filings. And we've been moving very slowly on the next step to the next step to the next step. Also, we've had difficulties working out, training people, getting the necessary information together and having the people, you know, some people to work with us to have tracking going and figure out where, you know, at what point we have to do the next step, and also setting up some different steps. And I think we've got something set up pretty good now. And so we do have a process. And one of the things we just sent out, which was a very important paper that we sent out, which was the one we had read last week, and that had went out last weekend. And so they have received all the papers this week, and they were required. We filed this in all 94 courts, and all 94 courts are required to stamp the front page and mail it back to us. And we did start getting some mailings in. So some of these courts are responding. You know, they're slow in responding because they don't know what to do. They really don't want to acknowledge anything we're doing, anything we're saying. And so therefore, they kind of just put us on ignore while they try to figure out what to do. But at some point, they got to make a decision. So we need to always give them a little extra time. You know, we tell them to respond in 3 days or 7 days. And we want to give them a little more time because, first of all, they put a lot of things off, and sometimes they don't even read it. And at some point, they do read it, and then they realize they need to do something. But that paper we sent in actually opened up a court of record. I think I explained that last week. So that court of record has been opened. The chief judge in every district court, he is appointed by the President of the United States. And that chief judge is responsible. And so that's why we named him very specifically in our show cause. And if he doesn't respond properly, then he's got to show cause by what authority he thinks that he can do something different. We also named the chief clerk. And the chief clerk also was appointed by the President of the United States. There are 94 of them. There may be others with those kind of titles in different buildings, because they got quite a few different federal courts within each of the districts. But there's really only one that is actually appointed by the president. So we named each chief clerk and each chief judge on a piece of paper within their opening a court of record within their district for them to respond. And the responses, of course, for the chief clerk is not to be asking for us for money, for that's extortion. Not to not file, because that's a crime. Not to conceal, not to remove, not to let it sit in some judge's desk, which we know some are, because they don't know what to do with them, and they've never filed them. Some have filed them under miscellaneous, so they miss the threshold of judicial process. Some have given the excuse, at least on one case I'm aware of, the papers, the judge still has the papers, but they didn't have any proof of filing, no stamps, nothing. Oh, it's still sitting on the judge's desk. They're trying to avoid this. So this paper that was sent in really puts them all on notice and puts them into a place where they're going to make a decision. And we are watching to see who's responding, to see what courts, and like I said, some courts are responding back with our paperwork, and we'll be tracking each of these courts, and we will be going out after indictments against each of these individuals that refuse to respond properly to a proper judicial procedure. We have a lot of plans to really start putting the pressure on the habeas corpuses we've put in. We've been a little hesitant because, again, we had moved a little too fast. We wasn't ready. There are things that have to be done. There are prerequisition. We have to, sort of prime the pumps, so to speak, just like we had to prime the pumps, and we still continue to prime the pumps concerning the sheriffs to prepare them, to train them. And now we've got to start pushing them a little bit. There's a couple of sheriffs out there that have some serious problems. They, too, are criminals, just as the judges. And we're going to have to go out after them. We're going to talk about them in the near future once we discover what it is and collect all the evidence against these people to go after them. And we are in the process of doing that. Things are going to take a little time. We have to move slowly. There's been a lot of different groups, and I've reported this from time to time, different individuals. Some individuals that are leading I don't know if you want to call them liberty groups, but they're just leaders of different groups of people. A lot of them are involved in the different in the courts, and they go in there, a man on the land and all that stuff. And in that process, of course, they are given them power, they're given them authority by acknowledging them and trying to separate themselves as if they're going to get justice in that court, which, of course, will never come. Not at least by the procedure that they're doing it. To get justice in the court, even under the way we do it, is difficult. They will never get justice the way they're doing it. But anyway, there's an individual out there, Anna Marie Reisinger, I believe how you pronounce the last name. She's put together a paper or a book. Actually, I got a copy of it she sent to me. It's a book. And basically, it's claiming an indictment in book form and trying to educate the people. And it's written down probably, I was told, on a sixth grade level. I don't even know if it's that high a level. But it is written down very, very, watered down. I don't think we should be going to chase after the people. This is my opinion, by going down to a sixth grade level. I think we have to speak up the way it is and tell it the way it is and let people learn and, really understand how things work and be able to understand what's going on in the courts. And anybody who really is paying attention to what we're doing and reading the papers, it relatively quick things click and people start to realize this is not that difficult. You may not have the knowledge and the ability and the resources to, go out and collect a lot of this data and bring it together and then write it and then file it and so on and so forth. And, you know, that takes a lot of time to learn to some degree. Some people can learn quicker than others. But generally, as far as understanding it, as reading it, I think most people can understand it. They do a lot of the legalese, you know, on the other side. When you start to read some of this stuff, you could have 2, 3, 4, 5 meanings, and you can change the meaning at will. And that, of course, is their plan, is to make things look very, very difficult and confuse people and get them to the point where they just don't know. They have to get an interpreter, you know. And so that's a problem. But anyway, getting back to this book, it does give me some information in here that I think is helpful anyway. They've done some good research. But I think they're going down the wrong road. We're going a different road. I read something on Mr. Griffin's site, G. Edward Griffin, and some guy was talking about the problems in the court and the fiction and so on and so forth, and laying out you know, some ideas and thoughts and what they thought and what was really going on and what the general opinions and thoughts were of others concerning the fiction and all these things. And really, to put everything in a nutshell, Edward Griffin's response basically was he didn't think going into their courts to argue them and dealing with their fiction from their perspective is going to amount to a hill of beans. As a matter of fact, it's going to confuse people more and just bring us further into their jurisdiction. And I think he hit the nail right on the head. Now, there were other things he said which made me to realize that he really didn't understand all of what's going on, but he did have a pretty good grip on it. There were a few things I think he missed, but nevertheless, his conclusion was right on. And I did see that in this book they added his name as some of the people that are working against these people and trying to bring down the fiction. And I don't know that he would be very pleased at that. But in any event, his name was in here because he was feeling contrary to this. I have received phone calls in the past. I guess maybe the last one I received a couple of months ago, maybe. But I do receive emails and different things from some of these people telling me what I need to do and so on and so forth, and how I should join in with what they're doing, because that's the only way. But I can tell you from my evaluation, from looking at this book, talking to these people, understanding what's going on there from the perspectives of these people who are fighting this on the level of fiction within their within the court's sandbox, that really they're putting together I'm trying to think what you would call this, but I'll call it a shadow government. They're putting together another government. And we've spoke about this in the past, and I've heard about this, and we were approached very, very early on when we started, a couple of years back, by some groups of people that wanted us to participate with them. And they are creating these, you know, governors for each state. They got a president. I guess they got a vice president. They got judges. As a matter of fact, I've come to understand Anna Marie. She's a judge in Alaska, but not in the court system that we're engaged in, not in the federal system nor in the state system, but in the system that they're building. And they're also talking about arresting people and creating their own jails and creating their own courts. And I mean, it's really, really way out there. And of course, I would have nothing to do with any of those things. And anybody who does, I think, is in serious, puts themselves in serious perils, because that is subversion against the United States of America. There's no two ways about it. We are not at that point where we have to get really that radical. And we need to pray that we never come to the point of becoming radical. But our situation is quite different than our founding fathers, because our founding fathers have already set up the system, and that system is still there. We have a court system totally put together with everything we need. We've got the right laws, we've got the Constitution, we've got the Bill of Rights, we've got lots of history. We have the sheriff, we have the county setups, we have our federal government set up in such a fashion, and we have the state governments. You know, yeah, they screwed up some of these things. The 17th Amendment hurt the structure of our government quite largely. But we can correct that. The point is, though, is that, you know, all of our laws and all of our rules and the procedures and all the processes in place, they're all just fine. It's just that they're not obeying them. They're not listening to them. They're not executing them. And so we have people who are enemies of liberty, enemies of we, the people of the United States of America, enemies who have come out to make war against the Constitution for the United States of America. And that's the message we're trying to get out. And when we get something back from some of these judges or some of these clerks where they try to return our papers or something of that nature, and that hasn't really been a large issue, but it has been somewhat of an issue, and we, of course, expected that. And a lot of them are sending them back saying, well, we have to give them money. So, well, that's extortion, you know. Or we have to fill out a particular paper if we don't have the money. Or, you know, that kind of stuff. So when they send it back to us, they're trying to make an excuse by saying that they need something else. But if they read our paperwork, they would understand that we are reporting in every one of our papers that we file in the all 94 federal district courts. We are reporting subversion against the United States of America in the highest offices of the land, in all three branches. Organized crime, out of control, subverting America, subverting the people, subverting the Constitution. And so that brings them to another problem that they have, ignoring this kind of a thing over trying at the same time to make money or to get money. I'm sure they realize we're not going to send a dime to them, so they think we're just going to go away. But that kind of has slowed down and stopped, that kind of thing. It has happened, but I think it's kind of slowed down and stopped almost. We get something here or there, something stupid from somebody. And then most of it is coming out of state courts, and we really don't care too much about what they do. Really, the power and the getting into the court's going to happen on that federal level. That's where it's going to happen. That's where the battle can be won and could be won almost overnight at some point in time. A few things have to give. And in order to make these things give, we need to put more pressure, more papers, more habeas corpus, and build ourselves more people behind us. We have a pretty large group, ultimately, as far as membership is concerned. And I think I could say, and without any hesitation, that collectively we have more people working, involved with us, and even members, than a lot of these groups that have been trying to get us to do things with them collectively. A lot of these different groups, they really don't have many people behind them. They're really kind of small groups. I doubt any of them have 100 people. I mean, maybe they do, but it's really, you know, it's collectively, again, they don't have thousands. So, you know, there is a problem with their message. I think we have the right message. I think this is the only message. I believe this is the only way we can save America. If there is another way, I'm not aware of it. I don't want to say that there is no other way. Because, you know, something else could come up. I remember when we were doing the committee man, we kind of thought that that was the only way we were going to save America, and we realized we had to get into the courts to get this problem that we came into, taking care of the corruption with the commissioners up in Albany. And once we got into the courts, that's when we realized the courts were even worse. And, of course, United States versus Williams just opened our eyes in a whole new way. And then we realize, wait a second, that's not the way. This is the way. Now, maybe something like that else is out there, but I doubt it. But, you know, we always got to give the possibility. But we do have a viable plan. We do have a lot of pressure on the system. I think we have accomplished a lot of goals over the past year. I think I personally feel that we stopped Jade Helm, at least maybe not stopped it, but put it off for the summer. I don't think it's something they're going to play with over the winter. I think we've slowed a lot of different things down with a lot of our papers. Right now, it is the time to go to the Congress. We're working on a three-page paper, roughly. I don't know. I'd like to get it down to two, but I think that's an impossibility to get the message up. Maybe a four pages. I don't know. But we don't want to make it long. But we want to make our message clear and concise. And we want to make the point clear and concise. And we need to do this before the year is out. We're coming into December. You know, this is the last week of the month. And so we're coming into December. And we'll be entering into the new year. And before Christmas, I would like to get these papers out to the Congress. And in order to accomplish this, it's going to cost money. There are 530 representatives we have to get out to. I believe it's 430 congressmen and 100 senators. So that's 530. And then there's 94 courts, okay? And, you know, I'm thinking also of doing the judges again and including them in with the Congress. So that might throw another 100 out there. So I'm not sure exactly where we're going to be, but clearly we're going to be about 630 at minimum to 730 papers that need to go out, individually addressed and paid for and sent to all of these people. All of the federal court papers, I think, will have to, well, we'll think about it. We may not certify them, but we will, you know, when we send them to all 94, one's going to have a hard time denying that they got it from another. But in any event, this, I think, is our next step. And I think we should try to do this before the year is out. And we're ready to start moving with indictments, almost. I don't want to say we're going to be doing this in the next week or two, but we are very, very close. We have to first perform certain other things before we start moving towards indictments. And we're also looking to the courts and seeing the courts that are responding and charting them off and what courts are responding. They're responding out of fear, and that's a good thing, you know. Fear is the best thing for them to have. They should fear the people. You know, when the people fear the government, we have tyranny. When the government fears the people, we have liberty. And so clearly they're not responding because they like us, because we are a big threat to all of them. We're a threat to their freedom. Forget about liberty. We're a threat to their freedom. If they don't start complying, they're going to find themselves in jail. And we're going to use this system, our system, the courts of justice, to do it in. It's just a matter of time. They will not be able to uphold what they're doing much longer. At some point, they got to cave. But you see, what's happening is that, and this is what all criminals do, when they think that they can get away with it, they get very arrogant, they can do what they want. When they start to realize there may be some dangers, they throw each other under the bus, because that's what criminals do. There's no honor among thieves. And so to save their own skin, they'll do this. And I know that they will do this, because I've seen some of the judges and some of the courts, once they realize, you know, that they may be in danger with us being there, because we're putting them into a risk factor that could end them in jail, and they want to get us out of their courts any way they can, and they literally almost throw us out of those courts. And we haven't been doing that much for a while, in particular court cases, that is, but that's been the experience. And so when we get courts that are responding with the paperwork properly, that are giving us their stamp and sending it back to us, and I know they don't want to do it, then we know where we can really get some leverage. Because when it gets time to indict, and we can't get the indictment within a district because they control that district and they're trying to build a blockade against that indictment, well, we know we can, by watching what's going on, we'll move it into another district where we know we got leverage and they got more fear than people. So it's kind of become, and it always has been, almost a chess game. But moving slow and very methodical and carefully is the only way. Patience, you know, as the Bible teaches us, patience is a virtue. Being very patient and moving on. I know a lot of people are very, excited. They really want to get things going. They want to get it done. Their impatience is pushing on them. But they got to hold off. They got to relax. We have some people who have lost their homes. I believe we're going to get them back. We have people whose children are actually going into adoptions. I believe we're going to get them back. We have people who have lost even their liberty, and some in jail 10, 11 years. I believe we're going to get them out. And then justice is going to come down upon these people. Some people, I have lost my desire of mercy for. You know, I think we should give mercy to as many people as possible. But then it gets to a point when people are so evil and they do such horrible things to children and to people, and they do it over and over and over again, it's very difficult to find mercy. Now, I'm not going to be sitting on any of the juries that would, put them in jail or give them anything. But I certainly will be one of the people sitting on the grand jury and making sure that the right paperwork goes in and the right wording goes in so that enough information is in the courtroom for the investigation to take place and for the jury to hear how evil these people are and how non-caring, no compassion, no care for human life whatsoever. All they care about is their own ego, their power, their money, and that's it. I have no idea how they close their eyes at night and go to sleep. I have no clue. I could not do it. But apparently there are people like that. And no matter what, these people need to meet justice head on. And I do believe they're going to meet justice soon in courts of justice. And the people will decide what needs to be done with them. And I think the proper thing will happen. Now, I guess that brings us, I don't really have much more to say than that. Habeas corpus status, we're moving on. Some of the process we're going through right now, first process, of course, is filing a petition for the habeas corpus, granting that petition, and filing it and delivering it to all the parties. That's the first part of the process. People have 3 days to respond. Not the day they receive it isn't counted, but 3 days after. Then they default. We give them about a week, so we go a whole week, and then we default them because they don't answer. After the default, we then move to a next process, and it's called contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And then our plan is to give them a week to 10 days, to digest that. And then after that, we're not sure exactly what we're going to do first. We may have something in between, or we may go just straight for indictment. But we're kind of holding off. We've got most of our cases are in default that we've already filed and are in the courts. Most of them have gone through the default system. I know there's one case that just is filed, and maybe we have two or three cases that are in the default and are moving towards over to opportunity to amend, contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And then we have quite a few cases that have reached that point of contempt of court and opportunity to amend. And now we're kind of just on a idling time, waiting for the papers of the court that we have sent in to acclimate through the system. I believe the paper we sent in was right on point, extremely powerful, right to the, right to the point. And we needed time for them to digest and acclimate to it. We need to see, again, what courts respond with a stamped copy of filed papers. We've informed them of numerous things, and one of the things we informed them is do not file these papers. Don't even think of filing, because it's a crime with 3 to 4 years, I think it's 3 years in jail for the clerk. And if there's a conspiracy, or even if there's just an intimidation by the judge gets 20 years for intimidating the clerk to not file or to misfile, to put it into a place of information, or not information, but to forget what they call it, miscellaneous. To put it into a miscellaneous area, okay, filing system, takes it out of the judicial process. This is a process, and this is going through judicial process. And when they move it into a place that's miscellaneous, it passes, it doesn't pass through the threshold of the judicial process. And therefore, that is covering it up. That is hiding it. It's concealing is what's called. So
they call it correspondence.
Well, yeah, and on a couple occasions, judges have referred to it as correspondence, and of course, that's kind of really asinine because it's laid out in a proper form that they're very much used to. But that is, we've heard this from two judges so far, correspondence, so that's where they think they're going to hide. And we're going to clear that up pretty soon. We are starting to getting ready to work on sheriffs. We actually have started with sheriffs, but we're going to really start working with sheriffs more in the counties where we are actually working some of these cases. We have to prime these people. We have to put the point to make it clear to them that they need to enforce these things. They need to understand what a crime is, a constitutional crime is, and start doing something about it. We've been working on a couple of very big cases. One is kind of put on a back burner. We don't know whether they're going to follow through or not. I'm not going to mention any names of any of these things. But if we get them, they're very big cases. And we have another one. They want to go forward with us. And they have a huge, huge following and been in the news quite a bit for quite some time. And so they're asking for our help, and if they go through with it, that's going to be really the opportunity to not only help the people, but also it'll be an opportunity to help we the people, because it definitely will get us some traction. And I don't know that they could miss in the news at this point if we got involved with some of these. But we'll see how those things go. That's not in my hands. That's in God's hands, whether that's going to come to be or not. But we do get calls from, I think we actually got three types of cases like this, the potential. And trying to think of the two. One, two, they're kind of just sitting on the sidelines, but the one is maybe active. We'll see what happens. As soon as we know, we'll report it, because we're going to want to make a big splash. Now, very, very soon, we're going to want to get really a lot of activity on the phones. We need to be calling up these judges. We need to be calling up the sheriffs, putting the pressure on them. Are they going to obey the law? Are they going to obey the Constitution or what? And so once we put that word out, we really expect everyone to pick up that phone and really make a call. If we do three of them, we need everyone to do three phone calls over the course of a week or something. And we'll put out some basic, we'll print some basic stuff up on some ideas on what you might want to just bring up. And you don't have to spend time on the phone in a dialogue. You could just a concerned person concerned about this case, and I want to know what you're going to do about it. Because we're here, we're seeing all over the place this violation of the Constitution and people just ignoring it. Is that what you're going to do, or are you going to enforce the law? Is that what you're going to do, or are you going to execute the law? You know, these are the kind of questions that we need to put into their brains, let them know that we the people are watching and coming. We need to all get active in that way. That's extremely important. Okay. But patience is an important thing. We have to have patience. We are working on these cases diligently. We're not going to give up on any of them. And maybe it may seem that we're idle, and we are idle on some of these cases, only because we have to do other things first. And those things sometimes take time, and we're very close to ending some of those things and really start to push them. Now, I don't know if there's any questions out there. I don't know whether I'm going to read this. I don't think we answered this question, but maybe that we did. Gerard, Gary, here's the question. Someone wrote and said, I don't believe that it is necessary for a judge to swear in a grand jury. What is your opinion? Maybe okay to swear in a trial jury, but not the grand jury. I just want a second opinion. Did we handle that question last week or the week before? Anybody know? All right, well, I'll just deal with it now anyway. I do not think an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution is really the proper oath for a grand jury. Although they have to have respect for the Constitution as far as the Bill of Rights is concerned, and not to tread upon someone else's, unalienable rights in their process of doing what they need to do. Even Justice Anton Scalia made that point, I think, in U.S. versus Williams case. But I don't see a problem with it. I don't see a big thing. But I think the most important thing is a vow. That's what every grand jurist must take. And every trial jurist must take a vow, too. I don't see any way getting away from it. They have to swear to the Creator, to the Governor of the Universe, that they will uphold a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in this case, in whatever case it is that's before them. They have to consider, they have to keep in line all three and always consider mercy at the end. And the answer to the consideration of mercy could very well be no, this person doesn't deserve mercy, but it has to be considered. It must always be considered. It must be argued and then decided upon by the full jury, whether it's grand or trial jury. So I think a jurist's jurists really should be taking a vow to the governor of the universe. That's my very, very extremely strong opinion. But if the judge wants to swear them in to uphold the Constitution, why not? I've already been sworn in, in my past in my life, and many other people have too, and I'd do it again, if it's necessary. So that's fine. All right, other than that, I think I've gotten to the end of anything I want to say tonight. I don't have anything more to say. Gary, are there any other questions out there? Is Gary here tonight? Anybody see Gary?
I haven't seen him.
Gerard, did you get any questions? Because I think you get a copy of the questions, too.
Yeah, I haven't received any new ones lately. Nothing new pending to this.
All right, I'm going to pass things over to you now, then, and we'll go from there. I'm kind of feeling a little nauseous tonight, so I may take out of here early, but I'm going to try to stay in till the end, but we'll see what happens, okay? So I'll pass it over to you, and we'll take it from there. And I don't know who's got Jan, are you here, or Robert, are you on top of what's going on here that might help to feed the next speaker
to
Gerard? Okay. All right, Gerard. Well, you can take it from here.
We're gonna open the queue up, and Jan's gonna come in and talk about his case a little bit. I guess he went over it with a couple of guys today. So let's get Jan in there first.
I don't think he's on yet. Is you up? You said he's trying to get on.
He's on. I saw
the
him
other
earlier.
Jan.
Oh, the other Jan. Okay, JP.
Yeah.
Jan from Michigan.
Right, Jan from Michigan. He's got a case pending in the federal court, and I guess he wanted to have people question and, tell the story a little bit of what went on. And I got a couple things to say about that, too. So, Jan, I'm going to open you up.
He didn't come into the queue.
No, I don't see him there.
Star 6, Jen.
Star 6 and then 1, I think, to get in.
There he is. Third one down.
Okay, gotcha.
Everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
I guess I was suggested to start with the district court. And the district court that I'm referring to is below the circuit court level, not the federal court, probably 3-4 years ago. It was dismissed without prejudice. because the judge there, and this is a blight case, basically it's stuff that you can't see from the road, can see from the sky, or peek into the bushes. They have this international property maintenance code that tells you what you can have in your garage, what you can have in your house, what you can have in any building, whether you're agricultural or residential. Makes no difference. Your building needs to be lined up like a Walmart. Nothing can fall on nobody. And then they can even question. If you have three screwdrivers or three drill machines, you may have too many. You might need to get rid of one. So, folks, this international property maintenance code is a disaster for America. But anyways, the township adopted that in the circuit court. So that wasn't even around in that district court. So the judge dismissed it because he says, well, I'm not going to put this man in jail, and I'm not going to give him a fine, so I'm going to dismiss this case. We had probably 15 witnesses. They shut the court down just to hear my case, and he dismissed it without prejudice. But what he told the opposing lawyer is, if you want to really sink your teeth into his case, you need to take it to the circuit level, because the other one is less than $25,000, and this one is more than $25,000. So they've been dragging me through the dirt here for about a year and a half. And I dismissed my lawyer because anything and everything he brought up, the judge dismissed. Even though the motions looked real good, they smelled real good, but the judge just dismissed them. So here comes habeas corpus, the grand jury. And so that was filed defaulted September 25th. The judge got hers. Everybody got theirs. And nothing was going on. So I was advised to take that paperwork. Oh, by the way, and my yard now is pristine. Even the police officer, deputy sheriff, has commented to some of his other deputies, my place looks like a park. Neighbors have come by and looked at it and just can't believe, because the buildings we had, they wanted to tear down. These were just chicken coops, little garage. And so we hired three contractors, and they went and redid the buildings, but they still have an issue. And it's like, judge came by to visit the property, even though she was told that the habeas corpus or the grand jury has ordered them to abate at law, they still are moving forward, blowing off the habeas corpus, laughing at it, and it's like they just don't seem to believe it's real. So I took the paperwork and went to file it in the circuit court, and the circuit court wouldn't accept it, even though I had a file on demand. They says, you need to file this electronically. But get this. In their electronic format, the court clerk has a right to refuse that document or any document they so choose. And if the clerk accepts it, the judge can reject it. So no matter how you want to go about it in that circuit court or state court, they don't want it. So then what I did is I took the paperwork and I gave it to the judge while the court session was going on, and that wasn't even placed on record. It was given to the court clerk, even a copy left, and it's like no sign that it's even in their hands. The court clerk's even given me the habeas corpus back to me while I was in court. So I guess that's removing documents out of a court. So that's a problem. So anywhere along the line, Gerard, if you want to make a comment, a question, whatever, feel free to stop.
Well, before you get going too far, you just said the judge came out to the property.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's normal. I look at you. Well, you don't have a jury in this thing, right?
No. The judge was invited to the property to look over the property because they had claimed that the property was a public and private health nuisance. And obviously it was not. But anyways, so she came out to look at the property. And did you think that they said anything nice about how like the buildings look or how the place looked? No. She stopped at the wood area that we had, and she says, oh, I got too much wood, firewood. I have 6.5 acres. I heat my house like 24/7. Either the hot water is being heated or the hot water in the house is being heated. And she's got to say, and these were pallets, and these were crates, and there were 2x4s and 4x4s and whatever, and regular wood and pine wood, all kinds of wood. And then he says, I have too much firewood. And then when she goes by my garden, my raised bed garden, she looks underneath the raised bed part. She's a 5-gallon pail, and she says, wouldn't that be better in the building, 500-600 feet away? And it's like, nobody can see my raised bed garden, and they're picking on the bees that we have on our property. And it's like, so they want to eliminate the bees. They want to eliminate the garden. She almost suggested that I throw some of the firewood away into a dumpster. And it's like, it's just unbelievable what America, what's going on in this world of ours.
Well,
so anyways...
How much wood is too much wood? They don't give you any answers, though, right?
They wanted a year's worth of supply in some of their documents. I don't know how they can determine how much they want me to have. But so that we had a tried to get that filed electronically, didn't get it filed electronically, and so it didn't get it filed. Though the judge has in her hands or in her chambers the habeas corpus and the default. And the federal court, on the other hand, went to file the judgment there with some other of the packet of paperwork that I had. And they didn't want, they says, well, we don't have this habeas corpus anywhere. And so... last week, I go to court and find out that actually the habeas corpus is in the judge's chambers, and it's pending. So basically, the judge is twiddling his thumbs with this stuff, either laying on his coffee table or wherever, and he's basically sitting on it and not doing anything with it. So the paperwork that went out to the 94 judges and clerks and so forth, I filed in the federal court for the grand jury that they were supposed to get mailed. So we got it to them before they got it. And they filed it, but I wasn't aware that the judge needed to respond to that paperwork. So it went into the miscellaneous file, and the clerk there that is the right-hand lady for taking care of his business, the judge's business, so she's the step-up level from the regular clerk, says, I think Gerard's got her phone number, and says that the stuff is looked upon, the stuff in this file here, whatever is being sent is looked upon as correspondence. So, correspondence. In the meantime, thereafter, that was the 19th. That was a Thursday. Now, the 20th, the next day, is I'm having an inspection, and court-ordered inspection of my property again, all right? They've been probably out here inspecting, in this particular case, probably 6 times. So anyways, and each time, I seem to be a step ahead of them, But this time around, I'm running out of wiggle room because I don't want to get rid of my raised bed garden, and I really don't want to get rid of my firewood. And I did gather it up in by my chicken coop in crates, covered up, and a nice section a lady's going to come in and take away. So it's an uphill battle with these people. And that's kind of my story. We're just kind of wondering what the clerk is going to do.
Well, don't forget, they just got recently that paper that we filed that went specifically to the chief clerks and the chief judge, whom you are dealing with. And so, you know, we're hoping that we'll get some riff there between them because we're going to, you know, we're going to give them an opportunity to amend now and tell them that we're going to indict them, you know. And where's that going to go? You know, that depends on what happens afterwards. We'll have to see, you know, who we engage after that if nothing breaks loose, you know. I mean, right now, that clerk should be filing that stuff. You know, the judge, for the judge to hold a habeas corpus for, it's over a month now, and they tell you that it's still in process. That's unacceptable. I mean, that right there, you know, shows that they're doing fraud. You know, look at you. Either we filed plenty of cases in plenty of other places, and when a case comes in, if they think it's defective, or even if they claim it's defective, they send it back with the defect listed. You got to pay. It's on the wrong form, this, that, but they never hold it. You just sit on it for a month, you know, and I don't know why he's doing that unless he's afraid to not file it, but he's afraid to send it back, and he's just afraid to do anything. I don't know what his game is, you know. I mean, they certainly can't be, you know, looking for defects that they can come after us because it shouldn't take them a month. I mean, look, if there's something there that's that blatantly wrong, they should know it, and they should send it on its way. I mean, what are they doing? Performing incantations and voodoo over it, hoping that they get us through some other kind of powers? I don't know. But I think it's going to be, you know, at some point, like John says, you know, we're going to have to start calling these clerks and these judges in mass, you know, asking them, what are they doing? I mean, if you Google miscellaneous is not a good thing. It's The Android phone has miscellaneous files that clog up the phones. Everybody wants to get rid of miscellaneous files. You know, miscellaneous files were designed to throw junk into that you didn't know what to do, but you didn't really want to delete them, but you wanted to just kind of stick them out of the way. So that's a really good name for those files, miscellaneous, because it just means a mix mash of anything, and nobody would even know where to go to get them. So basically what they've done is they've done felony rescue of this district court judge. You know, the sheriff was very interested to see the proof of service of the default of the habeas corpus, which I guess we got that late, but it would have made a difference to him to see that it was filed there. Ultimately, what's going on, and the reason we had Jan tell this story, because you're going to run into the same type of bony. It seems like that they've got their game together as far as pretending to file stuff, sending a copy back with a number on it, when in fact it's only in a miscellaneous file. So that's really, you know, look, if they didn't even send it back to us, which is removing it from the docket, and obviously they know it. And if they didn't know it, we certainly educated them because our failure to file has that on it. So I think the fact that the judge is holding the file is a good sign. It means he doesn't know what to do. So we'll have to see what happens. We'll have to make some phone calls to that clerk and to that judge's clerk, because I don't know if you'll ever get the judge on the phone. They protect them like they're an endangered species or something, you know. But that's where we're at with Jans, and that's where you're going to find a lot of them until we push this logger jam forward, and it will go, and it's gonna depend on us, you know, keeping the pressure on, phone calls, you know, even bringing it into the other branches. Look, at the people are supposed to have access to the government. We create them, and we should control them. You know, they're there for us. And the fact that they act like they own us and they tell us what to do, and the evidence that we're gathering by their own actions, which they send back to us, are all indictable offenses on their part. So, you know, everything that we're getting here, you know, it's basically causes of actions. They don't even realize it. So we're going to address that, and it's going to get to the point where, you know, it's going to go over their heads, and somebody's going to force them to do it. The people have to force them ultimately. But, you know, in order to get that police power, that's something that we're going to have to shake loose, which I believe is probably going to come out of the sheriffs. I mean, in the federal court, it should come from the marshals. I don't know if you're going to find a marshal that has enough knowledge and courage to do the job that he needs to do, unless he thinks he has some powerful forces behind him supporting him. And basically, that's where your sheriffs are. The sheriff needs the support of his community before he can do this stuff. And this is what we're working on. We're working on building the support of the sheriffs and educating the sheriffs, because look at the sheriff can go in there and uphold the law. He can arrest those judges. He can, you know, he can deliver an indictment from us to them that's going to give us a lot more teeth. So these are all things that we're working on in the future, and we're going to be working on them simultaneously. So whatever breaks through first, we'll do it. You know what I mean? It's the dam that's up there with a little, you know, we're poking holes, and eventually, once that water starts flowing through just a little bit, then it's going to remove the rest, and then you're going to end up with the big break. And so that's what we're hoping for, and I do believe that that's what is going to ultimately happen if we keep pushing and we act as a force of one and everybody cooperates. You know, one of the bigger things that we have is our court watchers. You know, they just fall apart when there's a bunch of people. And what Jan didn't mention is he had people there filming this inspection, and believe me, that made a big, big difference to these people. They don't like to be filmed. They don't like to operate during the day. And so basically what we've done is we've turned the lights on, and now we're going to watch and see who scatters. So anyway, I think that's about it with Jan's, and we'll keep on it. At some point, we're gonna have to call these courts. We'll do a call out with the numbers, Jan, so people can call from around the nation even, you know?
You want me to make a comment on inspection?
Yeah, go ahead, and then we'll finish up and move on to the next
guy. The 20th is Friday, and we had this inspection, and a court-ordered inspection, and I asked him for the documents. He says, well, you have the documents. I says, well, it's not a wet ink signature. And I showed him the no trespassing signs and said that, you're going to enter in on your own paperwork. I says, I can't stop you. If I tell you can't enter, then you're going to have me in contempt of court. And next thing you know, this officer is going to be taking my wife and I to jail. So I wasn't able to keep them from the inspection, and it seems like they're just moving forward. And even though we had about 17 people out there, they may have been a little bit nervous, but there still seem to be moving forward. And Officer Corey came by today, and he took and made copies of what the grand jury sent out to the 94 courts and clerks. But like I said, we took that to the federal court and filed it, and they really didn't even look at it, and says that, you know, this stuff is looked upon as correspondence. So that clerk might need to get a phone call and say, hey, look, judge needs to be responding to that. But I don't know what's going to make them wake up to the fact that your paperwork is solid. So with that, I yield.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jan. And look, that's why we're going to put pressure on the judge and on the clerk. The clerk feels comfortable because the judge is holding the paper. And really what we need to do is we need to call up the judge and the judge's clerk and say, what are you doing with that paperwork? Don't you know it's a crime not to file it? And then we got to call the clerk up and say, how come you're not filing that paperwork? you know, the judge is not allowed to hold that. You have to do your job regardless of what the judge does and pit the two of them against each other, because right now they're in conspiracy, the two of them. You know, so, I, you know, we'll have to see what happens, but I would call both of them and make claims on both of them and see how they hold up to that. You know, they know you. Believe me, the judge has seen that paper already. Don't kid yourself that it's sitting in a miscellaneous file and he didn't look at it. I guarantee you they made copies and passed it all around the court, so it's probably everywhere anyway, and that's fine. You
well,
know,
not only
I mean,
that, we served them directly. Every judge was served directly. Every clerk was served directly with their name, individual name, in their individual district. So two people, one clerk, one judge in each federal district. And then, of course, a copy was sent for filing to the clerk. So the one that they're talking about, they still were served, and it was served as a court of record. A court of record was open, which is a show, and we did what was called a show cause. They must respond. Or
right.
They default. We'll send them defaults.
How much of a time did you give them to respond?
7 days.
7 days.
And believe me, the judge understands what this is about. You know, I mean, I'm sure he's talking to his higher-ups, too. So we'll have to see how they want to play it. You know what I mean? We never said it was going to be easy. You didn't think that Satan was going to roll over and say, "Come on in, I give up," did you? You know, they're gonna scream and make noise and steam and smoke and everything. We're gonna have to drag them out of there bodily, you know. So, I'm sure they don't believe that this is happening. That's the other thing, you know. You gotta understand that they're probably a little shell shocked over this whole thing too. So at some point, they'll either come up with something or we'll just keep pushing forward. We'll have to see what happens, you know. And, you know, the sheriff was – actually, I got to say that your sheriff department did a pretty good job investigating things. I've been close to some police department work and different stories in the news on local town stuff. And most of the time, the story that hits the paper and the police report is so far from what actually happens. You know, there's usually a lot of misinformation, but those guys pretty much got it down pat in quoting our paperwork and saying what we filed. And I was pretty impressed with their report. They really look like they put their best foot forward in trying to protect Jan's interests. So anyway, we'll move forward and we'll decide. You know, I think we'll call the clerks and the judges. John and I are going to talk more about that. You know, and eventually we'll put out a call where everybody can call them. Maybe we'll even put out a dialogue so people know what to say when they call. I think that would be the best thing. You know what I mean? A couple sentence thing, calling in support and registering their horror that the people can't talk to their federal courts when the federal courts are now doing felony rescue of the lower courts who are raising the people. And by the way, that whole international property code is an unconstitutional thing. It comes out of the UN. To even go there with it's through Agenda 21, and it's treason to implement it because it's a foreign corporation. A local mayor or supervisor has no business contracting or adopting anything from any international organization like that. That's going to tell the people what to do, and that's another battle that has to be fought. Because it's definitely, absolutely egregious. You know, like you said, Jan, you know, they're going to tell you what you have in it and how many things you can have and all that baloney. Look at, you know, that at that point, thank God you were able to keep them out of the buildings. That was also another victory that Jan had an engineer that looked at the buildings and was willing to sign a thing that said the buildings are sound. And so they weren't able to go in the buildings. I think even the sheriff, probably the deputy, deterred them from going in because he had that signature from the engineer. So there was really no excuse to go in there. And so that was a good thing. I'm going to go ahead. We got a lot of guys in the queue here. So, John, Jan, I'll talk to you tomorrow as far as what we're going to do. Okay. I was very, very jammed up today. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hang on, let me get Jan muted And we'll go to the next question.
Just try pushing next question, and that may just drop them automatically because his box was unchecked.
Okay. Brett Johnson, you're up.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to see if there was any update on the paperwork that was filed for me.
Yeah, I don't know particularly.
Okay.
Well, no, we filed the last paper. We send you a copy of that. And
yeah.
then we filed the papers last week, which is a prerequisite before we do anything more on your case or anyone's case. We're not moving beyond the contempt of court process, and I think that's what we did with yours, contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And now we're kind of idling through everyone until we feel that the papers we filed last weekend acclimates to the system. We're also getting return slips on them from the chief clerks, which means that they're doing what they need to do and filing it and giving us the stamp of the file and time and so on. And so with that, we're then going to, and you know, I think maybe another week or so, maybe two,
okay.
I don't know. Once we see what districts are responding properly and what ones aren't, then we'll know where our strength is, and then we're going to start with indictments. And in the process of indictments, if they don't execute them within their own district, we move to the next door district, maybe where they are obeying, and see how we get the leverage from that position. So it's a chess game. And patience is required, and you know, when we realize that, oh, we got to do this first before we do that, and remember, you know, we've never done this before either, so we're being very careful. We will move very slowly. We want to get it right. We want to perfect everything as good as possible, and then we might say, well, you know what, before we go forward, let's make sure we educate these people over here a little more. You see, one of the big problems a lot of the other groups have, they get too excited, they don't have the patience, and they just jump in with both feet, and you know, they leap before they look, and they're expecting miracles, and they want to do this, or they want to do that, but they haven't done so many other things first. They don't give the people the time to acclimate to, you know, the whole process. They don't try to educate them. And that was one of the things we learned from Bill Thornton. And he made the point very clear. Remember, these people don't know much about common law. They're so fixed into the process that they're involved with already. And their mindset is kind of fixed, you know. They don't read the paperwork. They think they know. They're arrogant. And then it takes them a while before they realize that something, maybe they better take a look at the paperwork because something else comes up. And that's what I'm talking about when I say acclimate. In other words, maybe another judge calls up to talk to this judge, or they get a call, you know, at a meeting, because they're definitely having meetings about us. And then the judge maybe thinks, well, maybe I should read that paper. And you see, that's when they realize that they should have done something. And now it's kind of too late. And then they get deeper and deeper into it. But, you know, educating these people, educating the clerks, educating the sheriffs, educating the marshals, educating the FBI, educating the judges. And now it's time to really push more of an education on our Congress and our Senate. And when we feel that, okay, you know, we got enough people that I would think I'd say more that fear us and not respect us, but at least they fear us, that's a good sign. Because those are the people we'll be able to leverage. And they'll start throwing each other under the bus also. Once the indictments start moving, and once we can get one indictment through the system, they're going to start throwing each other under the bus, because they're going to realize that we're coming for them too. And it's just a pressure game is what it is. So it's coming, and we're working on it.
I'll check back. Just wanted to hear where you are. I received a copy of Dale or Scott's most recent habeas, and it's been received and been documented and filed and so on.
Yeah, I think that was the contempt paper.
I just got the mail today. I reviewed it, and it's just a stellar piece of work, as was my son's. But, you know, you say to be patient. We've been patient for 10 years, and we continue to stay patient because we know that tribulation work of patience and patience experience hope. And we don't ever, you know, forget those admonitions from the Lord.
Well,
bottom line is we must always continue to remember that, like the guy who was just talking for a half hour, I respect what he's trying to do and what he wants to do, but he's doing it from the freedom of his comfort of his office or his lounge or his bedroom or his home or his living room and his kitchen. My boys are doing it from the confines of a prison cell. And it's a big difference. I can't impress upon you after 10 years that Scott's big motivation now for anything is to have a lesser custody so he can be moved up to the San Francisco area so he can visit with his children who haven't paid a lot of attention to him over the 10 years he's been in prison because all of his family believes the government and not him. And so subsequently, they're put into squeeze in order to get to you or I or if anyone else is outside helping. They put them in a squeeze. And so I'm mindful of that, and I want you guys to be mindful of it as well because, like I said, it doesn't seem like a whole lot, but when you don't have a whole lot, a little bit's a whole lot.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things is that in this case, there's a lot of criminal activity that took place. And
sure.
Believe me, they're going to fight tooth and nail in every way they can to try to prevent the release. Because by releasing them makes them guilty of false imprisonment. And that, I know, is clear in their mind. So they have to. It's going to be an uphill battle. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
We will not relent from this. We will be. We will be relentless with this. And you know, it's a matter of pressure. But I don't think we'll possibly get an indictment within that federal district. But surely, we will find a federal district next door that will give us an indictment. And these will be extraordinary circumstances because look at when you have a criminal. You know, a group of people running the court system in a district, obviously you got to go to the district next door that will enforce the law. And believe me, again, you know, they may be in such a dire straits themselves, concerned with all the criminal activity that they're doing, just that kind of pressure that's going through their brain, plus the paperwork we put in, and they may feel, well, let's throw this guy under the bus. Let's help these people, and maybe they'll leave us alone. And they got it right. We're not interested in chasing people's crimes and, you know, opening up wounds and turning over rocks to find all these people. If they just start doing the right thing, we're not going to investigate them. We'll leave them alone. There's way, you know, if we investigate everyone and go through the whole system, everyone's going to jail. Everyone's going to jail. No matter where, what district you're in, and that's right down through the state courts, the county courts, the town courts, they all need to go to jail because they all have been violating the law. They've all violated the unalienable right of due process to begin with. They've imprisoned these people without cause. It's false imprisonment. It's kidnapping. And they're all in a part of the conspiracy. Most of them, I agree, are you know, just ignorant to the fact. They're useful idiots, as the communists call them, because that's how they get their work done, using useful idiots. But even though they're useful idiots, they're also guilty. But it doesn't make sense to try to put everyone in jail. Down the line, as time goes on, once we get back justice into the courts and then people come in with their complaints concerning some of these people, of course, we'll have to deal with it at that point. But we're certainly not going to chase people who will finally decide to do the right thing. And also, we would bring that into the jury should they be tried for other things that they want to consider some things of the fact that they did, you know, repent and they did start doing the right thing and their rightful actions helped to save this nation. So we'd be looking at it from a different perspective. Not that they can't, not that they're not going to give restitution to the damages that they've done, but maybe at least a little something light in the way of imprisonment in opposed to those who are just hardcore and don't care about anyone and have no compassions and just digging their feet in. Well, those people, we're going to push them as far as we can for justice. And, of course, that's up to the trial jury.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, I'll check in a week and so on. We continue to pray for you guys. I just want you to be mindful that a great patriot named Aaron Schiff went out into glory a couple weeks ago, and there's tens, literally tens of thousands of people who are benefiting by what he did in a lifetime of fighting a cause but he still died in prison. And the bottom line is that people are not going to jail. People are not paying taxes. People are not being indicted on the conspiracy to tax evade without it being willful, because he had the law changed. But nevertheless, all well and good, and he'll be spoken about as a patriot 100 years from now. He died in prison. And, you know, I don't want that to happen to our boys, you know?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with his case. I did follow his case. I did get some recordings from inside, you know, the hearings and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, what was going on in there was just unbelievable. And it was a horrible thing that he had died in prison. Look, they take people, and he was well into his 70s, I believe.
No, he was almost 90. It was almost 90 when he died.
Was he that,
the bottom,
how do they do that? How did, you know, again, where is their compassion? They have no compassion, concern.
They don't have hearts, because evil is what evil does. And if you don't admit that there's evil, then you can't admit there's good. And mm-hmm. it's an adversarial situation. The court's fake adversary. There's no adversary. When I was being tried in 89 and 90, we had the most gregarious courtroom of intelligent people, including ourselves, fighting our own case. And you know that when they're making decisions about you to seem adversarial, they're going home at nighttime and having martinis at the club together. They're going to the banquets together. They're going to the law administrative functions together. They're all patting each other on the back. But when they get into court, they draw their swords. Those swords are made out of rubber. They're not fighting each other. It appears that they are. So, you know, as long as that's going to be, again, John, I know my heart of heart tells me that you are, that you're spot on, that you're doing what needs to be done. But let me tell you, friend, like I said, tens of thousands of people don't know that they're not going to jail because of Aaron Schiff. Tens of thousands of people don't know that they're not being filed again by the IRS because of John, because of Aaron Schiff. They don't even know, because if you mention their name to them, they can't even spell his first name. You know? So,
right.
I don't need a soapbox today. I just wanted to get some information.
Well, we do appreciate all that, and you know, the bottom line here is this: any habeas corpus we take on, we will never give up on it. We will always pursue and continue like a pit bull, and one way or another, we're going to get justice. And even if we eventually, if it takes it where we're finally the whole system breaks and we get into the courts and then justice comes, one way or the other, justice is going to come by God's mercy.
Okay. All right, God bless you. Good night.
Thank you.
Have a great great week, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Fred. Okay, let me get to next question, 0472, unknown caller. I don't know.
And this is Ron. Hi, this is Ron in California.
Hey, Ron.
Hi. I don't know if Linda sent John my habeas corpus paperwork that I got from the court this past Friday. They're not recognizing it.
I don't know which one it is. What's the last name on it?
Paulson.
Yeah, that went in. Let's see, that went in. The habeas corpus went in on the 6th. They defaulted on the 14th, and we're going to go towards contempt of court shortly. Matter of fact, I think it's due up this coming week. I'll be talking with Linda tomorrow, seeing what cases are coming up for defaults, what cases are coming up for contempt, and then what new cases are going in. So we'll be working on that the next few days. They're not going. Look, they're going. It doesn't matter on that level. What matters, the level it matters on the federal level, what they do with it. It doesn't matter what the state courts do. It doesn't matter any of the lower courts below the state courts, you know, whether they're, you know, county or town or whatever, village. Or city. That's all irrelevant, because they have no control over the judicial process of the federal courts. All the battle is being fought in the federal courts to make sure they do the right thing. And let me tell you the reason why I think we have the opportunity in the federal courts. The federal court judges are far more sophisticated. They're chess players. They know common law to some degree, and they know that they're crooks and criminals. You see, there's the difference. A lot of the Supreme Courts of the states, you know, on the county levels, and forget about the towns, the villages, and the cities. I mean, they're just outright morons, generally speaking. But the ones in the state level, they are so arrogant. They think that they're untouchable. They're protected by the fiction and the fact that they really are operating as chancery courts and they get to really make the decisions. They feel that they can ignore the Constitution because, after all, that's a federal issue. It has nothing to do with the state. But so they really are just, you know, really self-deceived, and they have no idea the hammer that's going to come down on them soon. Because, you see, once the pressure is applied, and by the way, I'm getting feedback, so someone's mic needs to be put out there. But in any event, once the pressure gets applied on these people in the federal courts and they decide, well, they have no choice because, look at, we're going after people at the state level. And here's another thing I've discovered before I mention this. Here's another thing. When I went into the federal courts, this judge treated the lawyers that came in from the state level like trash. I mean, he was really hard on them. I think they like that. I think, you know, because they feel superior. You know, Bill Thornton says the federal judges, at least they read. And a lot of them are really, you know, big readers, especially on the appellate levels. They love to read. So, you know, that's one of the other things they're doing on the federal level. They definitely are reading it. The state level, different story. They get around to it eventually, and then they're concerned that maybe they should have paid attention earlier. But what's going to happen is if the indictment goes through on the federal level, guess what? That judge is being picked up. He's going to be put in cuffs, and nothing's going to stop that. Now, they have no control of that level.
Can I interject something?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Today, I lost my house. The judge was so pissed off at the fact that he was one of the respondents of the habeas corpus that he shelved the Constitution. He said, he told me and my wife that we were abusing the court system, and he took my house from me.
Well, get an affidavit immediately to us so we can add that to the system. We'll be going for contempt this week on him, and we'll put the pressure on him. We'll give a call to the sheriff. Now, in order for him to take his house, he's got to send the sheriff out. I suppose that hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen in the next few days. Is that the case?
Yes. The law firm, the opposing law firm, had a summary judgment today to get a writ.
Okay, why don't you give me a call tomorrow, and if you don't get me, you'll go through to Linda, and Linda will find me and get me on the line. We'll get a couple other people. Let's get the real details. Let's communicate back and forth as much as we can. We'll try to call the sheriff maybe tomorrow and talk with him. But we really have to understand what we're talking about before we do it, and we're going to put him on the line and let him know that, look, if this happens, goes through without due process, and if you allow this, then you're going to become part of that conspiracy. And, you know, you really need to understand what's happening here and do your homework. And that's how we're going to talk to the sheriff. So do that tomorrow. Get everything together. Get a habeas corpus. Get a sworn affidavit. Get it to Linda right away before you actually take it down. Let's look at it, read it, understand it. We can at least call the sheriff while you're going to get it sworn to, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Alrighty.
Bye.
And as far as we're concerned, we're out of your hands. So you just tell the judge that you can't stop us. This is the people coming after him. You just put a complaint in, and they're acting on it, and he has to deal with it. It's not your decision anymore. You know. Okay. Next question. Maude from New York.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
I just wanted to know what happens to those of us who have submitted a habeas corpus at the early phase and that was never filed. And what happens then?
Well, the habeas corpuses have been filed on the federal level from us. I know you went down. You were very early on where we were giving the people the papers and they were going to make the filing. And then we realized, well, wait a second, we should be doing it. We'd have a lot more clout and a lot more ability. They have not sent your paperwork back to us. We then just recently sent out a paper concerning the fact that they need to notify us and that any clerk that is hiding, concealing, removing, or not filing the papers will suffer an indictment. And the same thing with a judge, especially through intimidation, so on and so forth. As I'm sure you're aware, we sent that out last week. And again, I'm going to repeat myself. We're going to allow this to acclimate through the system. We have to give it time. You know, Bill Thornton, again, I want to go back to Bill because Bill really gave us a lot of wisdom. And he basically made the point very clear. Look, you have to educate these people and you have to give them time to think about what's going on and time to read it. Because, first of all, they don't read it until they get themselves too deep into it. Then they decide, well, maybe I better read this stuff. And then when they read it, they wish they would have read it earlier. And then they become another problem they're not sure how to deal with. And one problem adds to another. And it just complicates the whole thing. So we need to go a little slower and get through the system. We're very, very close. I'm working, as a matter of fact, on some of your paperwork. I spoke with Linda about it last week. I'm working on your paperwork this week. We are responding very specifically to the judge involved, to the sheriff involved, and to the lawyers of that law firm involved. They've said some things that were not true. They said some things that were trying to intimidate us. They treated us disrespectful. We've already given them a contempt of court. Now we're really going to hit them hard, and we're going to lay out the, just lay out the law to them. And so that's going to be going out. And then after we get those letters out, that's when we're going to give a call to the sheriff. So I think this week we'll hopefully finish up on it. We're not going to get any headway this week because we got Thanksgiving coming up Thursday, the holiday weekend. But I think next week is when we're going to start to get some headway. New York City hates us. They really despise us. We went down and we went after, eight of the highest court judges, the highest judges of the courts, the Supreme Court of New York, the highest judges. There were eight of them. And we went out after all of them for RICO. And we even indicted them on a state level. That didn't go anywhere. And we're going to reset that into the federal courts soon or eventually. It's something that we're just waiting again. We have to go patiently, slowly. We have to educate. We have to prep. We have to prepare. We have to see who's responding and who's not responding to decide how to go forward with this. So I know, happen to know from people down there that have gotten back to me, that have told me that they'd love to see me in the city because they would take me out, speaking just like that. And we're talking about, the law enforcement down there, and we're talking about the judges. And the federal level is not happy with us, and we did do a habeas corpus. Our very first habeas corpus was done down there. They tried to reject it. I told them we couldn't reject it. And that was done. I actually done that personally. We didn't do that through National Liberty Alliance. But in any event, we did get the guy out of jail. It did, and they were not happy about it. They did continue now with his court case. I'm not sure exactly where it's at because the guy got frightened and actually is kind of underground right now. But I do have his papers, and we're going to start digging back onto that court case to find out where that's at. But they did respond, and they're not happy with us. And so they kind of dug their feet in, and they're very close down there. New York City is really a problem. Any major city is a real serious problem for crime. And the state court and New York State Supreme Court and the federal court, I think, are really working together against us. And that's why you had some problems when you went down to Brooklyn. And we were dealing with people in Brooklyn on this other case, too. But look, the clock is ticking. Papers have gone out. We're going to see who's our friends. And if we have to go into an indictment down there, we're going to take the indictment to another federal district, maybe a little further north, because of RICO, out-of-control RICO and organized crime within the judicial process down there in New York City. And I can tell you that there's some serious, serious problems going on down there with the New York City Police Department. And they're doing some really serious, I don't want to say. It's some real serious stuff. And I just happened to be privy to some of this from other people, people who had to leave the city, people who've had their homes taken away from them, and they didn't owe any money to anybody. It's just organized crime working with the courts and the police department doing the dirty work. And unfortunately, they have no sheriff down there. At least out there in Long Island, we have a lot of hope because you do have a sheriff. He is elected out there in Suffolk County. And so that's a really good up for you on that end. And that's where we're going to get our leverage. But we may have to go out of the city to actually do the indictment. But it's coming. It's coming down that way.
What's going to happen to all those people that we sent the habeas corpus to who didn't respond and they just went plowing ahead? And
oh, yeah. All of them are involved. It's a conspiracy. Every one of them. We're not just indicting a judge. We're indicting all the respondents involved, every one of them. So.
Well, yeah. Wow.
All right, we have a lot of noise coming through there from Jan. All right, you got it. Okay. All right, anyway,
feel better, John. Feel better, huh?
Yeah, well, look, you know, by the way, as I mentioned to you before, don't worry too much because the sheriff's got to come out and kick you out no matter what they do, no matter who they send out, no matter, it doesn't matter. No one can remove you from that home. And the sheriff did tell me that he was going to obey the law. He's, I'm going to obey the Constitution. I'm going to obey the law. Without the necessary papers, I'm not going to do or any of that. He really was kind of unaware of most of what was going on when I had spoken with him, and that was way back. And but we'll be calling him again soon, but I can't do it until we get everything else sort of in line. And then we can really produce it to him because, you know, we have to give him hard evidence. We got to give him the paperwork, and then we got to give him an education so he understands what's going on. And then, you know, hopefully he's going to figure out what he needs to do, or we'll suggest to him exactly what he needs to do.
Yeah. I know. It's a process, and it's breaking a huge wall.
Yes. Huge, especially down in New York City, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, I am beside myself on how seriously defunct it is down there. You know, I remember Serpico down in the city back in the 70s and all that went on down there when they went into the courts. As a matter of fact, I had a friend of mine who worked on that in the courtroom as an ambulance driver and technician during that time period. And the crimes that were taking place down there. Well, I want to tell you, even though they might have cleaned up something for a little while, it was all just really, you know, superficial work because the criminality has gotten even worse since then.
Yeah. It's all greed, John.
Yes, it is.
Greed. It's greed.
Yeah, yeah, right. I agree.
All right,
thanks, Maud. We're all praying for you.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, Gerard and Gary and all the one listeners. Let us all pray together. I just posted something on my Facebook. 1 million children meditated for peace in Thailand.
Well, that's nice. Amen.
1 million children, John.
And that's what we need to do is pray to the Lord for peace. Amen. All right, thanks, Lord.
Okay.
And remember this, we're not going to give up.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, dear. Thank you.
Good night.
Night.
Okay. Next question, Illinois' Gary. You've been unmuted. Illinois' Gary, you have the mic. Unmute yourself. What is it? Star 6 and then 1.
Are you talking to me?
You're the one, yes.
Okay, I'm not Gary. I'm not Illinois. This is Mike from Tennessee.
Oh, well, boy, was I fooled.
Sorry about that.
Okay, Mike from Tennessee, now that we got that straightened out.
Hope it's not a disappointment, but I had spoken to Laura recently, L-E-G-E-R-E. I can't properly pronounce that without butchering it, so I won't even try.
Right.
But she told me to call in tonight, and I don't know if any of you remember I had called in and spoken back in the month of May when I was released from prison on May the 16th after being railroaded into prison for in 2006. I was so fed up with corruption in government in West Tennessee that I ran for office. And part of the thing that I was dealing with back then, before they ever called it Agenda 21, was Agenda 21. And I knew that the components that they were trying to force down people's throat, including eminent domain for taking of land for economic advantage for the county to sell it or give it to an investor or developer, was one of the big problems. And, of course, what the gentleman was dealing with earlier, part and parcel of what I was running against to prevent, and basically trying to clean up the county from the corruption. And I'm not a politician. I'm just a guy that got fed up. But I won the race, and then the next day they said I lost the race, and I found out how they'd committed voter fraud. The guy I was running against, his appointee, actually was the person that counted the votes and manipulated the outcome. So I sued, and while I'm suing, a friend of the guy I'm suing shot at me and my wife and shot and killed our dog right in front of me. And I was railroaded into prison for telling a guy to stop shooting, to put his gun down, and that he was under citizen's arrest. All lawful, legal, you have the right to defend yourself, protect your property, and enact a citizen's arrest in the state of Tennessee. And I was there for 2.5 years, day for day, released on parole. And then just before the next election came due, our farm was raided without any reason, no pretense, nothing other than they just wanted to know if I was running for office, and I informed them that I wasn't. Regardless of that, they decided to figure out a way to arrest me, and they asked my wife, who maintains weapons for herself while I'm gone, she takes her guns out of her safe and brings them in the house for her protection, which is totally legal. And, of course, I was released on parole with the fact known that she keeps guns, that she has a weapons permit, that she carries a gun. When I'm there, she keeps it in a safe. When I'm away, she has it out for her protection. This is how they're disarming not only the people of the state of Tennessee, but they're also railroading innocent people into prison. And I am looking at the potential of being sent to prison for 10 years for being in the vicinity, not owning, not possessing, but being in the vicinity of a gun, which is not a crime. And, of course, this is all to silence me because of not only running for office, but also having filed a lawsuit against the county executive, against the judge and the district attorney for exposing their corruption and being outspoken on a radio show that I created prior to being railroaded the last time. Upon release back in May, when I completed my time, I had got a call from a person that said, you really need to check out the NLA. And this is something Laura also wanted me to mention and to bring up to kind of clarify why I've not been around for many months. And, well, I contacted the NLA. I listened to the Tennessee calls for quite some time. I had requested assistance, and there was a fellow that was over the court observers, and I had requested that. There were several months that went by where I had court dates, and no one ever showed up. Every time I would ask, he would say, well, we are, you know, having difficulties, or they forgot the date, or this or that. Different reasons, of course. But the bottom line is, no one showed up, so no one was able to see what they're doing in the courts. There's no light being shed upon this other than me speaking out about it. And that's a shame, because this is a tragedy for the entire state of Tennessee that's going on right now, where they're getting away with literally incarcerating innocent people and stealing from them and disarming the state. And, of course, I had a couple of friends. I used to be in management with Federal Express, and I had a couple of friends that are retired pilots that they're doing quite well for themselves. And needless to say, they wanted to help in some way. Like so many people, they do not have any faith in the courts nor Bar Association members. But I had talked to them about sound like this group in L.A. had maybe found a way to try to hold some accountability in places. And, you know, they said that they had gotten a couple of people out of prison on filings of habeas corpus and different things. And they said, great, we'll listen in. And, you know, these are professionals. These are not amateurs in any stretch. They're people that know the way businesses function. And, of course, they wanted to verify two things. Number one, the cases that the habeas corpus actually did work, so they can verify if this is true. And other than that, they requested that, as any organization has to keep books on money coming in and going out, they wanted to see that should be, you know, available to see how much money they've brought in the last 3 months and how much money's gone out and what they're spending their money on. So they would know that if they donate, and one fellow was looking at $15,000 donation, the other guy was looking at a different amount. I'm not really sure, but I believe it was a little bit more than that. Like I said, they did quite well for themselves. Even though they're retired, they did quite well. And so with a sizable donation like that, they just wanted to confirm that the money would actually be going towards, in some effect, helping me as well as many other people and being put towards a good cause.
Well, let me respond to some of this. You know, as far as talking with people and people are not didn't respond, and you didn't get help in the courts, you didn't get the phone calls, and that's not the only thing. Other problems, I'm sure. We have suffered from subversion from within. It doesn't last long. Either people just come in, maybe they're just a derelict of duty and they want the position and then they don't do nothing. I mean, it's just whatever. That's a possibility. Maybe they were part of a subversive move to hurt us. We've been attacked, so to speak, by groups of lawyers who have tried to infiltrate us and try to cause problems on the phone calls sometimes, like our open phone calls, open forums like this. And we've had people come in to take positions and just totally destroy the whole thing. And I don't want to mention names of individuals, and maybe it's incompetence, maybe it's dereliction of duty, or maybe it's subversion, and it's difficult to tell sometimes. And we are trying to get a better hold. You know, we've grown quite quickly. We got a big membership. We got a lot of work going on. We actually started the habeas corpus too early. We didn't realize it at the time, but as we went through, we realized that we were unable to handle it. We didn't have the proper personnel to be able to deal with the paperwork. We also had lost our the guy that was running our courtroom observer. This guy was excellent. Unfortunately, we had people come in to subvert, and they got a hold of him, got his ears, took him in a different direction, and he became our enemy. And he was a very close partner, so to speak, with us, with National Liberty Alliance. He was running his own courtroom observer things for years, and I had met him at the courts, and we struck it off pretty good. I offered if he wanted to work with us, and he came with us. But he got connected with a group of people that really started to go down the wrong road and wanted to bring us in a different direction, wanted to play in the fiction, which we refused to do, wanted to take us a different way in jurisdiction, where we refused to do. We have to stick on the jurisdiction that we're given in the United States Constitution. And so that, of course, has created a lot of problems. But I think we've got a lot of that fixed. We're starting to really put together a much better structure. People are starting to really work in their positions and starting to get a little more experience and a little more knowledge and starting to be able to manage better. It's taken time. We've set up a system. For instance, we have these committees, and one of the committees is, of course, is the courtroom observer. We have another committee, which is also called the IRC, which is really an investigative response committee or research committee. And we were subverted there by a couple of individuals, and one after another, and it weighed heavy upon us and caused a lot of problems. But we've straightened that out. We got a good leader in there now. And we knew we'd suffer these kind of things. The good thing about National Liberty Alliance is they show themselves eventually, and as they start to do the damage, we're able to see it quickly and deal with it. Unfortunately, when some of these things were happening, we were so overloaded we didn't see them quick enough. You know, we also were subverted by a couple of people who came in when we were working with the courtroom observers, and they went on to an ego trip, and they started putting up some demands, and of course, we're not going to respond and give in to their demands. We have a knowledge of what we have to do, and we're going to stay on course of what we're doing, and we're not going to be intimidated, nor are we going to fall to any kind of pressures that people might want to try to put us on. We've had problems where we've had people in a particular state who have come in and subverted the entire process, within a couple of states, where they've taken the leadership roles and took our people down a whole different path that they shouldn't have been going down. And one state in particular, these people actually did get arrested. And I believe right now are in jail. We've cut our ties from them. We told them that they were doing things that were very dangerous, that was going to end up in jail, and we're not going to participate, and it's not going to go on our calls. And, you know, we've had people using our seals, trying to make believe that they're the grand jury, and coming underneath us and putting us into arm's way, you know. So these kind of things are happening, not unexpected. Okay, we deal with them as quick as possible, and we're trying to set ourselves up. We have national leaders now. They've got, experience now doing different things over the past months and really working on their management skills. And now each one of the committees, there's going to be a national administrator, or shall I say a coordinator, a national coordinator, overseeing the committees. And also we're having the committees report to us and giving us, information on a weekly basis. We're really trying to get that affected right now. Over the past couple of weeks, we've even changed the way we're running our open forum, you know, our Monday night call, really trying to get more people involved into the process, more people coming in, giving reports, and becoming more like a corporate report, so to speak, for lack of another word. But as far as money goes, as far as donations, people are going to have to trust in that, because they want to take us out every way they can. And the IRS is one of their tools. And by posting anything of that nature puts us into a serious situation and a concern with the IRS and an assault from them from the federal level. So, unfortunately, we can't report that. I can assure you, I can give you my word, and there is no big money. I wish there was big money. Last month, we could barely pay our bills. We asked for additional donations the last week, I think it was, or the week before. We did get a couple of people. We had one person who sent $500, and other people sent $50, $20, you know, so on. We did get enough money coming in to catch up on our bills. And now we're moving towards mailing out. I can tell you that, we have thousands of members, but our donors that are keeping us going and afloat is in the hundreds, and most of them are giving $5 a month, and because that's what we asked for. And you know, if everybody was to give $5 a month, we'd have huge amounts of money, but we don't have that. And so reporting money is a serious problem, though, because of the IRS and what they would want to do. And it's just another battle we'd have to fight, and we're not willing to fight it. But I can give you my word that there is no multi-thousands of dollars coming in, or hundreds of thousands, or anything of that nature. I really wish there was. And anybody who would like to give a large lump sum of money, we would get down and talk into details and open up certain things that we wouldn't necessarily expose to other people. We went down to Florida to meet with some people some years ago. Last year, I think it was. And we lost a lot of time going down there, but we went down there. They wanted to meet with us. They wanted to give us money. We never did get any money from them. But we exposed everything about ourselves and what we were doing. We brought a lot of information, and we also laid out our plan to them on how we would spend their money. And we would report to them to some degree of what we're doing with that money that they would give us. So if people have a large sum of money and they want to give to us, we would talk a little differently to them than we would with most. But clearly we can't report anything that we would post on our website, which they would then use as evidence and come out after us with all these false charges. So that's where we're at with that. But we're doing our best to respond to the subversion from within National Liberty Alliance, and I am glad to say it's at a minimum at this point. And we have shut down all state meetings as far as a weekly meeting is concerned on the phones. And we're really trying to bring those people who really want to get involved on a state level into the national meeting from time to time to talk on whatever ideas and things that they might want to do. But we are encouraging people within each all the states to gather together to discuss, and they could do this on the phones, they could do it on Skype or whatever they want to do, but stay on business to focus on how we're going to deal with the sheriffs, how they can work in a methodical way across their state in order to maybe communicate with sheriffs, and also to grow their membership within their state, to get people in counties that we don't have people in, so we can get a presence in every county across the nation. These are the things that people need to be doing in their states, but they should not be getting together. And if we find out that they are getting together to discuss UCC stuff or even things that are contrary to National Liberty Alliance, we're not going to take too kindly to that. We do have leadership vows and agreements that have come out. We've got lots of them have come in. We've got them in file. And we did put the word out that anybody that we catch from this point forward in a subversive way, we're going out after them legally. And especially if we have an agreement on file with us that they agreed that they would stick to the principles and stay with the plan, the National Liberty Alliance plan. Otherwise, they would be in violation of that, and we'll go after them. So anyway, hopefully I answered all your questions there, or your concerns.
Well, I've been out of it since August because that was the last conference call in Tennessee when I called in, and when I brought up the offer from these gentlemen who were listening in on the call, I was basically cussed at and hung up on.
Well, you went into the, well again. This is a major problem because look it. We knew when we put this together, we would have to have a weekly meeting. We knew that. This is what keeps us alive. This is what keeps people informed. This is what gets growth. This is what comes with ideas and people working together, because what we're doing is people working together. We also tried to get this established in all of the states to do state meetings to get involved. And it's very difficult to control that. And what we found is, unfortunately, in many places, people with egos or opportunists to come in and to literally rob memberships. We're working hard to build people up, to get masses of people across the nation to do what we need to do to take this country back. And we need to do that through the courts, and people will come in and maybe they're articulate and they get in and they start to talk and take control, and next thing you know they're running the meetings over everything but NLA business. We've had people who were state coordinators, and people would call them up and they talk bad about National Liberty Alliance, and this is what the enemy does. But that's okay, because as soon as we find out, we start to eliminate them from our membership and replacing them. But we always knew, look, this is how evil works. It's unfortunate that you didn't find the Monday night meeting and come here and get involved here, because I'm sure it would have been a whole different thing. But I will say that we've been plagued with problems concerning our courtroom observers group. But right now I think we're back on point and on mark, and we're going to become really very active very soon on that particular end, especially with phone calling and maybe even letter writing. I'm not sure, but definitely phone calling and also helping people out in the courts. I know the call went out down in out in Michigan with a gentleman that was spoke a little earlier. You might have heard him, Jan. And he said he had 17 people out there. You know, when we did something out in Long Island, I think we had 3 or 4 people out there. We do get word here or there, a couple, and we don't need a lot of people. 2 or 3 people is fine. But sometimes we do get a lot of people. You know, I know when we were doing things here in New York, we filled the courtrooms and went out into the hall. It became standing room in the back. They even had to open up different rooms to accommodate us, which were larger. So, that's the kind of activity I'd like to see in all these cases. But that takes time, and some places, you know, were more sparse with membership than other places. But again, even just to have one or two witnesses in the courtroom with you is better than none, and that is helpful.
I agree,
anyway,
and
we're doing the best we can.
Right, I agree with that. I think that people in the courtroom that can witness this and let the court know that there are people watching is important. And certainly, I'm reaching out again for help because I was asked to make this call. Because
have you spoke with Linda yet, or have you filled out a paper on our? Because we have everything organized well at this point. Anybody who is filling out, you know, our goodness, what do we call them? Intake forms, okay? We can respond as quick as you can respond. In other words, if you can get all the paperwork together in a week, we can start to move you through the system rather quickly. And we have about 100 cases. Yeah.
Yeah, I did all that back then, and the habeas.
Yeah, but that we were sabotaged back then with the paperwork. Totally.
Right.
I'm just going to say it's sabotage, and by numerous people. And again, I can't say whether it was subversion from the enemy, particularly in some cases, I don't think it was, but clearly ego and other things working inside people that just caused havoc, to some degree, maybe even incompetence. But they were just, you know, and again, we have to work with volunteers, and some people have no experience in management or things of that, you know, areas, particularly management and organizing skills. And then we have to work to teach, and people learn, and we work it little by little. We're just the people. So we'll get better as we go on. But we have picked up some people who have skills and who have been put into good positions that really are starting to really help us to shine and get the work done. And we now have a very good setup. We're pretty well geared. I mean, we still lack people. We you know, all of us are working literally around the clock 7 days a week in order to keep, you know, up to what's happening. But we have gotten extremely better, a hundredfold in our intake. I will tell you, when we finally, you know, realized what was going on and put a grip on it and got all, it took me 2 weeks to get the paperwork from the individuals involved. And then when we got it, it was all worthless. Nothing that we wanted, nothing that we asked for. And it pains me to have to even talk about it and say it, but, you know, we're also not going to hide it. So here we are, we're talking about it, and that's what happened. But now we've got a really tight focus on it. We have people watching. The people that are in positions are trustworthy and really doing a great job, and we're getting the job done. So if you put the paperwork in, it'll go through the system.
Well,
it
I don't
won't
know
go if, to what happened last time.
I don't know if there's many people from Tennessee on this call, but I go back on the 22nd of December for an appearance, and then the trial set for January the 7th. MikeParsons.org is my website, and if you click on narrative, you'll be able to read what happened, what's going on. But I just wanted to...
Well, if you want us to help you, just fill out the intake form and follow the process and that we've laid out for you, and we'll do our best.
All right.
Hey, Mike, are you close to another state? Like the court that you're going to be at, is it close to the border of another state that borders Tennessee?
Yeah, it's about 20 miles from Arkansas, about 50 miles from Mississippi, and about 100 miles from Kentucky.
Well, I know we have people in Arkansas. I know people in Arkansas, and I know we have people in Kentucky. So, you know, we do that when a state is sparse. We've put the call out to the neighboring states, and that helps. Like John said, anytime you get bodies in the court, it's an improvement over nothing. Believe me. You know,
one of the problems we're running into is that they posted on the door to the court building, no recording devices, no cell phones, and they search everybody coming in, and they are pretty much blocking anybody from coming in and recording anything. And
well,
there's no law to allow for that. They just do it, and they say, well, that's by order of the judge, and it's, quote, the judge's court. And I said, no, it's the people's court. And they said, no, it's the judge's court. So they're operating their own.
Yeah, but remember, when we come in as courtroom observers, we become witnesses, and we become a human recorder because, again, you take notes, and then they write affidavits.
Yeah,
and the recordings that we do are really for the purpose of affidavits. But go ahead, Gerard.
We tell people to bring a legal pad and a paper, and I'll tell you what, and sometimes that's more unnerving than a recorder, because every time you jot something, you can sit there and draw pictures. They don't know what you're writing. So it's very intimidating to have a bunch of people with pencils and legal pads. That works too. But, you know, we had the one guy we had that was running the courtroom observers program. What he would do is he would get there early. And there's two Supreme Court cases that say that they cannot.
Well,
he would
when you say early, we're talking a week or days at least, but usually a week
right.
or more.
He would get there
he
early
would get
enough.
Involved with, yes, and
right.
make
he
the
would,
process work. He's coming in with cameras.
Right. He would give the judge the two rulings that he was basing it on, and say, you know, he was respectfully asking permission to, and he made a little press credential badge up, very professional. And he'd come in with his camera. And I'll tell you what, most of the times, if you get a hold of the judges early, there's no reason for them not to record that thing because, you know, it's not a family court case. It's nothing, you know, these are you know, mostly civil or criminal for that matter. It's all public stuff, but nothing that needs to be hidden. And most of the time, the judges will acquiesce to that as long as you let them know ahead of time. So that's one thing that, you know, we can do.
Well, it would be a nice thing to have another set of eyes other than just myself and the missus, because it's their own private club that they're running. It's totally lawless, and people would be amazed at what's going on in these courts in Tennessee. I know that there's a lot of horror stories out there. This is just another one of those, and
yep.
It needs to change. I know that there's a lot of stories here. My heart goes out to these people that have lost their family and their homes and everything, and something has to be done.
Yeah, this is RICO on a national level, and I'll tell you, I don't know how long it's been like this, but I know it's been like this maybe about 10 years, maybe longer, but no judge gets into a judgeship without being approved by the bar. Now, to some degree, that's been happening for quite some time, but I've heard that in the past 10 years, the clampdown on that has been very strong. And, you know, if you're a judge, you have to have it in you to be have that tendency of being crooked, that and you're also going to obey the bar, and that's the key to them. Look at when a judge is in a courtroom, he's expecting these lawyers to not bring certain things up. You will not get a lawyer to write a habeas corpus. Clearly never one like we write, okay, which is the facts. You'll never get a lawyer to come in and bring before the courts the jurisdictional problems and the fact that they're not adhering to the Constitution. None of those things, because they're trained to stay away from that, and they're also warned. And if they break the rule, believe me, the judge will call them into the chambers real quick and lay the law down and let them know, this is it. You get one chance, you blow this one, and they're going to lose their bar license. So they're very well controlled. The judges control their courtrooms, and the judges are controlled by the bar, and they're all crooks. They're all making money. They're stuffing their pockets. There's a lot of ego going on here. There's a lot of big retirement funds moving between them. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's just RICO on steroids. And then a lot of favors. And remember, you know, they're protected by favors. The more favors they do, the more protected they feel, because they're owed to themselves. Hey, after all, I protected you guys, you know. And that's the game that's going on. And this is everywhere. This is in the federal courts. These are in the state courts. These are in the appellate courts. It's in the counties, the towns, the villages, the cities, everywhere. It's just it's a plague. And so we're dealing with a criminal organization, ultimately, is what we're dealing with. Now, I'm sure there's a few people with conscience that's realized they're stuck in this thing, and here they are, and they're trying to figure a way out, but they got weak spines, and of course, maybe their life is in danger, too. But we're recognizing some of them are bailing out, trying to get away and not having to deal with our cases. We see judges recusing themselves, judges going on vacation or something, you know, just not going to be there, you know. We have a recording of a judge that as soon as our name came up in the courtroom, she lost all composure and recused herself and said, I know you. I can't be in this case. And the person on the other end said, well, what are you talking about? I don't know you. Where do you know me from? No, don't you worry about it. I know you. And she left the courtroom. And the next judge, and the same kind of a situation happened towards the tail end, even with the next judge. He folded the whole thing because of the pressure we put on him. And so that was one of our successes. And it wasn't 100% success because they still grabbed onto the guy and they put him on probation. So we're going to deal with that. So we're not done with that case. So they haven't really completely done the right thing. But it's just they're crooked. They're criminals. They're a problem to America, and they've got all of these people. They got they know who they are. They went to their school. The bar runs the school. They know exactly who these people are. They keep a very good record on all these people going through law school and following them through their careers to make the decision on who's going to be a judge and who's not, because they want the right criminal in place, and that's the end of that, you know.
Well, you're right.
Anyway.
It's a criminal cabal, and these are, in my opinion, they're a bunch of Luciferian sociopaths that need to be put under the jails. But that will, you know, when people have had enough, then they'll rise up. Until then, it'll just be status quo, and people will be continued to be put in positions where innocent people go to prison and the guilty go free.
Well, to some degree, you're absolutely correct. Only the people can save America. That is the bottom line. We believe here in National Liberty Alliance, we just do the just thing, the right thing, on every decision we make, and just keep going forward and leave it in God's hands. And if God's willing, it's coming down and nothing's going to stop it.
Well, God's given us the hands and given us the feet, and we are the body, so it's up to us. We are the...
Yep.
This is our time. It's our history. There's nobody that's going to do it now except us. We are it.
Right. That's it. We just have to do the right thing. Whatever that is at that moment in time, just do the right thing. And never do the wrong thing thinking, I better do the wrong thing to get some leverage here or something. Never do that, because once you do that, you've just lost your relationship with God. You have to do the right thing and just let it go, because he's in charge and that's it. So that's a major part of our strategy, is just do the just thing.
Look at when you have the spear point, you certainly have the pitfalls that find you. And look, we've turned money down because they wanted a return on investment, or they wanted to control. Or they had some organization with them that there was no way we were going to get involved with. So we've had a lot of carrots dangled on a lot of sticks, and so we're a little gun shy about biting on anything, because look at that's a good way to get a downfall. Somebody's going to give you a big chunk of money, but what's the strings attached to that money? I mean, are they going to come in and they're going to demand things and take a controlling interest and then dismantle you because you were willing to take that payoff? Just you have to be very careful about everything that you do, and we always pray on it. And hopefully we'll move forward and we'll get what we need when we need it. It's always worked like that. And even the times when we thought that we dropped the ball and we did the wrong thing, then you pick it back up and you find out that you were in a better position than you were had you had the first thing you did worked. So, you know, to me, that's God talking to us when he puts us in a better position, even after we thought that we failed. And so that's what keeps me going. Anyway, thank you very much. And good to hear from Tennessee. And we've heard lots of horror stories in Tennessee. Tennessee does seem to be one of those states, you know. There's a few of them out there that are bad, but I don't know. They can have a contest to see who's the worst. I don't know who would win that. I'm in New York. It's pretty bad, and Illinois is pretty bad, and we can go on and on. We got horror stories, like you said, all over the place. So, this thing is going to fall due to its own weight at this point. It's way too top-heavy, And I think people are disgusted. I think they really are suffering the death of a thousand cuts. And I think we just need to hold on, you know, to where our momentum and our force topples this thing. So thanks a lot. And I'm going to move to the next question. It's getting late. Thank you for your call.
Good night, all.
Yeah. Okay. I got no name. Last numbers of 5140. You're unmuted.
3140.
Yeah, it's 1140.
Oh.
I'm Rope from Indiana, PA.
Okay.
Okay. Let me throw you into the nugget out there.
Okay.
if somebody orders me to do something, I'm going to charge them. Like Jan, supposedly the judge come out there and says, I'd like to see this wood pile moved away. I think I would charge her for that. John, you're gonna bang your head up against the wall because I think you said you were a contractor. If somebody come out to my house and I say, hey, put that roof up on my house. Put me a new roof up on there. Wouldn't you give me a bill after you were done?
Of course.
There you go.
I'd give you a bill before we start.
That was the 13th article. Article 13. Article 13.
I agree, and I know Jan agrees, and he did put some signs up, and he put some federal signs up, but he's got to be careful because they're trying to put
judge
him
a bill.
Yeah, but he's got to be careful. He's got to be careful because they're threatening him with putting him in jail. So I have an appreciation on his being careful. And I always tell people, look, do whatever you got to do to stay out of jail. You could agree to anything you want. You're under duress. We could deal with that later. But just make sure you stay out of jail as best you can. Do whatever you think you have to do. And
hey,
this
if
is where he's at.
Somebody wants me to do something, I'm going to do it for him.
Yeah, but
if,
this is where he's at.
If I want you to put a roof on my house, you're going to give me a bill. Well, that's what I'm going to do to the judge that just told me to move that wood off of my my property. Mm. If you think about it,
This is what Jan can do if he wants. I mean, we don't advise him to do those things.
I'm not talking Jan. I'm talking everybody. If they give you an order, go ahead and do it. Do it. Act like the servant, but give them a bill.
Yeah, one of the problems is you have to enforce the bill, and to enforce the bill, you got to go back into their sandbox, and they're never going to give it to you.
I'll go back
and
into
so
their sandbox
realize,
in a minute.
But there is a way to deal with it. But people have to be educated, and even that's an uphill battle, and you got a lot of suing to do.
They don't have to be that educated. If I ask somebody to come in here and clean my house. And they go outside. If the woman comes in, cleans my house, she's going to say, hey, you owe me $50. I performed the duty. You know, we did away with slavery.
Well, I agree with that. But one of the first things, of course, you want to make sure you do is let the people know that there's going to be a fee involved and how much it is, because that's
okay.
Also another problem.
Good.
But, yeah, I agree. Right. That's what I think Jan had done. He put up a fee,
good.
And he can
then
go
I'm
and he can pursue it.
I need my money up front.
They can go and pursue it, but look at, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle. It's another court case. The key thing
good.
That we're trying to work out is keep people out of jail, keep people to save their homes, prevent the people from the town from coming and trying to demolition your property, okay? Have people get their children back. These are the important things. And if it takes getting thrown out of the courtroom and taking your property back with you, and that's good enough. You know, restitution will come later. And if they want to pursue other remedies, of course, they if they think they're qualified and able to do it and they understand how they might be able to go about approaching it within the existing court system, then by all means they should. If you're going to play in their sandbox, all you're doing is empowering them. You have to understand how to take them into your sandbox, and that's a difficult task, very difficult task.
I don't know about that.
Well.
I think you should be able to get down to your district court and file a claim that, hey, this judge did not pay me for the services rendered. She asked me to move this wood pile. I hired somebody to move this wood pile for her because she didn't like it. I tendered a bill. She didn't want to pay it. Everything's contractual anymore. Since they did away with slavery, everything's contractual.
All right, well, we appreciate your position. I mean, I understand it. And, you know, again, anybody who thinks that they can win the battle,
you can win the battle.
Well, yes, I understand that. I don't want to debate that. Listen, I understand that, but I want to tell you there's very few people who can, okay? And even those who can win the battle, they still may lose it. Because, believe me, they
You can bring it under any jury and say, hey,
you don't get a jury
for them, and they didn't pay me.
You don't get a jury in court no more.
They're not going to give you a jury. Even the dumbest would get it.
They're not going to give you a jury, and even if they do give you a jury, it's going to be a puppet jury.
I don't care. Don't give me a jury. Give me two judges. Give me three. Give me one. He's got to understand the contract.
Well,
if I say to a barmaid, hey, get me a damn beer, and she brings it over, she takes $2 for that beer.
Have you been in the courts?
I don't have to be in the court. I'm already in the court with you. You know.
Okay.
Me and you are in court right now. We're arguing our point.
Getting into the court and dealing with them, you have to understand what you're up against. But anyway, we do appreciate your position. Thank you. Gerard, you still there?
I'm muted Robert, and I'm... And I'm murdering.
Took a powder on me, I thought.
I'm here.
There you go. Go ahead, Robert. I'm sorry.
Hey, I just wanted to do a quick follow-up. I think a couple months ago I was on the call, and I kind of poured my heart out about a case regarding the right to travel versus a license. And I told you how the cop changed the name on the ticket. He didn't accept he took my ID and then he changed the name. And then I went into court on a pretrial motion and, the judge, basically ordered, would not hear it. There was no due process. He refused and he, told me to leave the courtroom. And as I was leaving, he said, okay, let's talk about issuing a warrant for failure to appear. And when he realized that was a pretrial, not the actual court date, he changed the court date to that day. Do you remember this whole thing?
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I did submit my paperwork, for the habeas corpus. And at the time, the only address I had was the Hyde Park address, which I believe is yours. Am I correct, John?
Yeah, that comes to me. That's
okay.
The NLA address.
I did send it. I enclosed a $60 donation with it.
Send the paperwork to me, it didn't get run through the process. It's got to go through
I did. It went through intake?
Oh, okay.
Yes, it did go through intake, and Linda was involved, and I got the address.
So we got the case out? We did the habeas corpus?
All we did was, I didn't have the new address where Linda was. I only had your address at the time, which I got from somebody prior to her.
Well, what's the last name on the case?
It's Robert Dale, and the name, the court knows me as Robert Dale, House of Spurlazo. They know me for years under that name, and we talked about
that. Because I don't have a case in my list here for Dale or
Robert
Spurlazo. I don't have that in my possession now. I mean, Linda could have it, and I'll be talking with Linda tomorrow. She'll be giving me the new cases that she's got. But listen, have you been speaking to Linda?
I have on email.
Okay, well then, you could give her a call to find out, either by email or give her a call, find out what the status of your case is. Let me go up on, while you're talking, continue talking, I'm going to go up and see what the status is online, but go right ahead.
Okay, well, I did talk to her on email, and I didn't, I I can't seem to get an answer to this question. Where is the status? Where is my case? Where is my paperwork? Where's the donation I sent? And I
okay,
can't seem
well,
to get an answer.
Let's get your last name again. Your last name is
okay.
The case.
Robert Dale.
What name are you using on the case? Dale?
Robert. Okay. Well, it's Robert Dale, colon, House of Spilazzo. That is the
okay,
name.
Okay, I got Spilazzo,
S-P-E-R.
Robert Dale.
Yep.
I got it. And
all right.
Let's see. It's in phase two of processing. It looks like it came in. The original paperwork was started on 10-1-15. I believe that's the start date. I could be wrong on that, but that's what it looks like. It's in processing on stage two, which means intake.
Right.
Intake means that your intake for petition status for habeas corpus is being collected. The information is being collected. Stage two, which is called processing, means your petition status for habeas corpus is being prepared. Okay, so all of it appears that we have your habeas corpus. I mean, we have your
paperwork,
sworn affidavit. We have
yep.
the intake information,
mm-hmm.
and so everything is there. And now Linda is working on it. Now, I don't know how long you've been listening tonight, but
you
explained
on
the plagues of destruction in this neighborhood, well, in a couple of things, but this is one of the things that we've had huge problems with, trying to get the intake information to come in and get it done properly. And believe me, we went on. We had actually between the two, we had like about 150 plus cases, and not one of them was in a position where it could go forward. And only recently have we been really able to, you know, get things together. But things are moving along now. We have somewhat of a bottleneck because we do have a lot of people, but people are still dragging their feet. So anybody who is moving quickly and getting the paperwork done, they're going to move right in. They'll move into the you know, in ahead of 100 people. If you move quickly with your paperwork, you'll move in ahead of 100 people.
I've got
you
everything
know?
I could get. The only thing, the only
well,
problem
you're in
I have
stage
was
two. So you're going forward.
Okay, so you do know you have tracked it down. You do know where the
there
paper
is. There is tracking. If you go out
okay.
to our website, highlight directory. Okay, just highlight directory. Click on track on the.
Yes, I saw that. It's
track
a stage,
habeas corpus
stage
bulletin.
Two.
Right. Yes, that's.
But that doesn't mean that you know where the paperwork is. That just means that you know it's in
stage
two.
Well, you got to follow. You're in stage two, which means your petition status for habeas corpus is being prepared. Please allow time for processing being contracted.
Okay.
Now, I have 1 week, but that's if we were working, and I got to fix that because that's not correct.
Well,
okay,
now what's stage
now,
three?
If you have any questions or problems, you know, you got the address for the secretary, and you probably can call her. Stage
Let me just
three
ask, what's stage three?
Stage three, it's right on the page here, but it's stage
yep.
three is being queued, means your habeas corpus is ready to be served, awaiting final signatures, affidavits, and a donation to offset mailing costs.
So technically, so shouldn't
that,
I be at stage three?
Well... When it goes to stage three, that means at that point Linda is sharing the paperwork with me. At that point, I get it into my presence.
All right. Because, I
okay.
mean, you got the donation. You got the paperwork. I thought it should be at stage three by now, but maybe.
Well, bear in mind, there are other people working through the system, and we can only get so many out a week because, you
right.
know, not everybody gives us money. Let me tell you something. Let me repeat that. It's unfortunate. Not everyone gives us money. We have over 100 people in the system, and a lot of those people are new, and
yeah.
They should be coming to our Monday night meeting. I happen to know that they're not. They should be taking the civics course. They
yeah.
should be returning back to people what they're getting. Look, if we're going to do something good for you, you don't have to do anything. We're still going
right.
to do your process and everything because, you know, we said we're going to do it. But look at you. You know your conscience. You know freely you have received, freely give.
Right.
And if you see that this is a good system and you can help others, you should participate in helping National Liberty Alliance working to save this nation and to help people that are in the same kind of a situation that you're in. But I happen to know a lot of people aren't. And we know that we're going to get people who can't afford to give us money, and that's why we're going to put their paperwork through. And if we get one of them a week here or there, we definitely can send that through. If we get three or four in 1 week, you know, we may not be able to send them all through.
Right.
Definitely the people who have given a donation, we're going to push them the moment they get into that queue. So your paperwork might very well be sharing with me this week. You might want to call Linda and see where she's at with that. Because remember, you know what an office is. If you look up the meaning of the word office, it's a small, tiny little hole, and everything has to funnel through it. You have a lake coming through a tiny little hole, you know. And so things slow down when they get into the office. She is extremely overloaded. She working 6 days a week and even the nights of the seventh day. And doing a great job and getting a lot of work done, but it is it does take a lot of time.
I
but
believe
I think
that
you're there. I think.
Do you have a number for Linda?
Goodness. Well, you send her an email and ask her to give you a call. She'll give you a call.
All right, I'll try
intake, that. Intake. She's you can get it through intake, or you can get her at Linda@NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Yeah, and as far as. All that other stuff you're saying, I mean, I attend all the meetings. I am doing the civics course. I'm a state coordinator for Illinois.
Yeah.
I sent $60, which is like it's like sending $6,000 for me, honestly. But I scraped it together and did it. And so I'm doing everything I can on my end.
It's unfortunate we're considering raising that because it's beginning to cost us more than what, because look, we do a lot of mailing. When each case is a next step and a next step and a next step. And some of these are certified. And it takes a lot of money between the paper and the ink cartridges and the paper and the envelopes and the stamps and the certified mail. And we have to put it in a large envelope so it's not, just one stamp on thing.
Right.
And hopefully we've done some work which we may be able to eliminate some of the procedures we're going through. And once they start to really obey, and do the right thing, it'll go a lot quicker and it'll be a lot less steps. But right now that's where we're at. We're still at $60 for the donation that should offset the cost and maybe throw a few extra bucks towards someone who can't help.
Okay. I hope Linda's on the call. I'll try to reach her again.
Oh, I'm sure she is, yeah. I spoke with her earlier. She said she would be.
Okay, John, Gerard, thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, next question.
This is Foxy in Orange County. I'm calling with a few quick things, guys. I wanted to find out about... I just dropped my pen. I can't believe it. I wanted to find out what the relationship is with Sandra Hutchins, who is the Orange County Sheriff, because I'm really concerned about my daughter, who's been in jail now for 6 months for doing nothing, and, who is any day to be transferred over the past, I think she's been 4 weeks now when she was told that she'll be going to a state hospital for 3 years.
Well, how are we doing with your paperwork at this point?
I don't know. I was actually attacked last Tuesday and pulled out of my car, and I lost my car, my laptop, my phone, everything. So that's another thing I'll address later. I'm just striving to understand.
Right. Here's one of the things, it's got to go through a process, and that's the intake process we have. There's a digestive process.
John, I'm not really interested in, I've heard this past 2.5 hours, I'm really just trying to be really specific. I don't want any more generalized answers. Sandra Hutchins, she's the OC sheriff. How much has she been given, and what has she been given for education? I'd love to know what she's been sent, even if it's not...
Well, she has been sent 5 memos from us. Actually, we started our first memo process, and they were quite long, and I think there was about 4 memos from that. And in these 5 memos, I'm trying to explain to the answer. And in these memos, we educate them on specific things. It's almost like pablum. We're feeding them little things so that they understand what certain things mean so that they can understand the Constitution. So that's what we're doing with the sheriffs on that end. We're also, we're delivering to these sheriffs, we've got 12 papers in the courts.
John?
What? Yeah.
You're not hearing me. I'm not asking you to tell me how many memos she's received and what it kind of covers generalized. I'm asking for you to send me the actual emails. You'll email me whatever you've sent her. So I'm educated as well as far as what she is aware of.
If you go to powerofthecountysheriff.com, And you read through that paper. All of the sheriffs have been directed to go to that page in order to get any past information that they had missed, or whatever the case may be, or for more information. And if you go to that page and you click on, you know, you read through that page, when you come to the bottom, you'll see all the papers that we've delivered to them. And you can just click on any one of them, opening them up. It's a PDF file, and you've got it.
Yeah, I wanted to find out where they were on the website. So
yeah.
Try to
Power,
get them to,
you can find them in two different, hold on, you can find it in two different ways. You can either go to powerofthecountysheriff.com, or you can go to our site, Highlight Directory, and come down to...
I only need one right now.
That'll get you right to the page.
Powerofcountysheriff.com, you're saying.
Powerofthecountysheriff.com.
Powerofthecountysheriff.com.
Yeah, let me double-check that by typing it in, see...
Okay, I'm trying to get
it's
real...
It's powerofthecountysheriff.com.
Okay, and
Or you can go to our website, Highlight Directory, and come down to the Power of the Sheriff. It's four down. You can click that. It'll take you to the same page.
Four down, Power of Sheriff. Yeah, what I'm always asking is really for specific, so please listen to the full question before you start answering. I would really appreciate that. I think what you guys are doing is great. Now, let me go on. I want to find out, though, who has called her. I hear you speaking to different sheriffs. Has anyone spoken to Sandra Hutchins, O.C. County, Orange County, California?
Not directly, no.
Is anybody going to?
At some point in time, if we work with your case, yes, we will. Any case that comes up where she is involved, yes, we will, if that's necessary. And again, if everything starts to move smoothly, then it's not necessary. But, of course, any kind of roadblocks, then it becomes necessary. Let me finish answering, because remember, you're not the only one that's hearing the answer, and there are other people who have situations they'd like to know about their sheriffs. And we have a little over a dozen cases moving through the process. And if at some point in time, at least a couple of them, we know we're going to be talking with the sheriffs. And so we will be talking with the sheriffs in different cases when we hit certain points and of resistance. And because we're going to need sheriff power and we're going to need marshal power. So and that would be the same thing in your case.
Yeah, I'm trying to get through a few quick questions here. I thought they would be quick, but obviously not. I'm just trying to basically make certain, because obviously, as I mentioned to you, I've tried to speak to Sandra Hutchins. She will. I'm told she doesn't take any calls. I tried to reach her again the other day when I had seven police officers circling my car for no reason and pulled out of my car, and I wasn't allowed to get out because I just pulled in and parked. That's another story. But also I'm told that Orange County doesn't allow any recordings and doesn't allow any cell phones in court. And I would love to get the information that you have about the two rulings to be able to get video, because obviously video is going to be the most important thing we could possibly get, you know, to request that a week before. And if that information could be put onto the website or emailed to me, I would really appreciate
it. It is on the website.
It is? Perfect. Where do I go, Gary?
I believe it's on the court reporters tab, the information, the court cases.
Court reporters tab, I'll check.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I won't have a laptop till tomorrow. I've been a week without a laptop, which is really crazy. I'm also worried because of the fact I like the idea of all the phone calls to people, but here's my worry for Orange County. Orange County clerk, as I found out, office has no phones. They do not allow the public to contact them by phone. Neither do the Orange County judges. And so when you say flooding...
Yeah, but bear in mind, we're not working on that level of phone calls. The phone calls that we would be pushing for would be to the federal judge to do his job, or to the sheriff, possibly, or the marshal. And it depends on how we would, it depends on the case and what's going on and then how we would approach it. And again, we're still formulating different things for different cases on how we would approach it.
Okay, so is the sheriff above is the marshal above the sheriff?
The marshal is responsible for whatever orders and responsibility of the federal court to execute it.
So is the sheriff above the sheriff's position?
Well, the sheriff is responsible to protect you and your county, irrelevant to the marshal. And
right.
And so that's where the sheriff comes in to make sure that he doesn't execute or allow any unlawful execution take place, whether it comes in from the FBI or the marshals or some police department. It's his duty to make sure that the Constitution is upheld in every case. And
right.
that's
well,
what we're trying to teach the sheriffs.
I was handcuffed and taken to jail, and then I was released after 2 hours. So I was detained for about two or two and a half hours, and I was scared for my life. I was pulled and pushed and everything. That's the OC sheriff would not come to the phone. I actually called. But the marshal, I don't have the name for the federal judge for OC or Orange County. The federal judge you're saying would be the California federal judge?
Well, there's no, there would be, yes, we would have to get a hold of the sheriff at the point, I mean, the federal judge. Only after we write the papers, then we put his name on the papers, and that's when he gets involved. Until then, he has no involvement in your case. He couldn't care less about your case until we make him responsible for your case.
And when is that going to happen? The federal,
when the intake is complete and the affidavits are in place, and then Linda says, well, let you know we have everything we need. I'm going to move you to the next step. And then that would then move you into phase two of the process. And once she takes that into phase two, it might take a week, two, or three, or whatever it takes for her, depending on the workload she's got, to get all the paperwork prepared. Now, once that's done, it then moves into phase three, where it comes to me.
You don't need to repeat this. You've already gone through this on this call. I'm not asking you to repeat that process. I understand that. I am simply trying to get through some questions. And
okay, go ahead. I'll try to answer yes or no or very
perfect.
Simply. Go ahead. What are the questions you have?
I'm trying to understand, obviously, as I've told you, the Orange County Sheriff, the Orange County Clerk, the Orange County Judges, there's no phone calls. So
we will make no contact with them until the paperwork is in process.
No, there's no contact with them because they don't allow any communication.
They don't allow you to have communications, but we'll see if we can make communications. And if we can't get a phone call, we'll do something. First of all, we do our stuff through the mail. At some point in time, we will get on the phone, possibly with the sheriff, maybe, depending. And we'll work that out as we come to it. Remember, we're different than you. We're calling from a different perspective. Okay, you're calling as one of the people, and they don't really care about the people. We're calling as the grand jury or the administrators for the grand jury, and that might make them a little worried, or they may think, this is just another internet group trying to do something. But when they find out we're not, then maybe they'll pay attention.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying very, very much, but I've been told probably a good 10 or 12 times that the Orange County sheriff has no time for phone calls from anybody. And
right,
doesn't
well, we'll see. Well then we'll just do a letter.
Yeah. No matter who they are, because she has too much to do.
Well,
anyway,
that's okay. We'll send a certified letter. Go ahead.
No, I'm just trying to be really clear so that you are aware. And my concern is because I'm really worried for my daughter's life. I mean, really worried for my daughter's life. I visited her last Friday, and she tells me, you know, that she's not doing well. I mean, they abuse her, and they talk under their breath. And I told you they've taken the handcuffs over her wrists, you know, and not unlocked them. And she's being treated very badly. And I've met a guy who told me that he was in the Orange County jails, and he was amazed. He said he couldn't have stayed more, and he was in there a week. And she's been in there 6 months, and she keeps telling me all these things each week. And I'm really worried. I don't want her to die in there, and I'm just really, really worried. And she's scheduled to be moved any time. You guys told me a week ago, you know, you'd see really quickly that this goes through for her, and all the information, Linda has that, and I've spoken to Linda, as I did. I think I found you guys, three weeks ago?
What's the last name on this again, Rita?
It's Stewart, Catherine Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T.
Stewart, okay.
Yeah, S-T-U-A-R-T, and not affidavit. It says affidavit by Roxy Lamb. I'm her mom. L-A-S-B.
Okay, we still have you in one intake. No, you're still in phase one, which is intake. I have Elizabeth Stewart. Is that you?
No, Catherine Stewart.
Okay, I have Elizabeth Stewart. I don't see Catherine. I'll talk with Linda tomorrow when she's on the call listening, I'm sure, still.
This has been very helpful. And I sent in an updated affidavit. I sent in the information you guys needed as soon as I was on the call with you guys within a few days. And then I was told, Linda told me to do an updated one. I needed more info in it, and I did that immediately, and I sent that to her too. So I've sent the other information by snail mail to Hyde Park. And
You shouldn't have sent anything through the mail. If for some reason you can't get it through the email to Linda, it needs to go to a fax. And she needs to know you're going to be faxing it instead of emailing it. Then she can alert me, and then I can look for it and make sure I get it. So that's an important point. And I want to take the opportunity to let everybody know. I get so much mail. I get sometimes, packages 2-3 inches thick of court cases. I don't read them. I haven't got the time to read them. I don't know what they're about, and that's not what we're doing. So, and I don't need that kind of information on a case. The case doesn't come through me until it first goes through processing. It's got to go through an intake process, and all of the necessary bugs and everything got to be put in before I get it, and then we deal with it at this level. To get the papers printed out and mailed out. But I'm saying this not just for you. I'm saying this for everybody because this has been a major problem. People are thinking that things are being done because they're mailing me papers, and believe me, not getting done.
John, can you listen ever to me? I just
No, no, I understand, but I wanted to take the opportunity to talk to everybody.
But
go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A week ago when I was on this call, I told you all that I could not get the docket, the only thing they gave me when I went into the courtroom.
We don't need the docket then. If you can't get the docket, we'll move without the docket. We already told you that.
Yeah, and they gave me the minutes, and I paid $8 to get the minutes, and the minutes were 8 pages, and I was told by Linda to mail them to you at the Hyde Park, and you said okay.
Okay, I think I saw something that came in as minutes, and I will. Is that something in the past week or so, week and a half? I think about a week, right?
Yes, it's only been within the past week and a half.
Okay, I think I saw something with minutes. Now I know what it is. I'll get it to Linda.
Catherine Stewart, and it's the name of the people, the person that evidently attacked Catherine. Catherine was attacked, and she's been put in jail, and so this is like a real nightmare. And now that she's been 6 months, we're not talking a short time.
Right.
And
all right. Well, look, I think you need to give, a call to Linda again to see what it is that's missing. Because, again, it's in intake. And if it's I don't know that the minutes would make that big a thing. But
I don't
ahead.
Have my smartphone because everything's been taken from me. So I don't have Linda's number now.
All right. You can try getting it through my number, 845.
Okay.
233.
Okay.
6560.
6560.
Okay. And a lot of my calls just go directly through to her.
No, exactly. And let me just then say a couple things here. I thank you for all this, by the way. I'm very, very grateful. I'm just really shook up from having been attacked, and that's something else. I don't want to go into that tonight. What is the... what can I do to help here in Orange County as far as making the sheriff or the federal clerk or the federal judge aware? I mean, is there anyone?
Well, I think, the best you could do is work together with other people. You're in California, Orange County, California?
I'm in Orange County, California, but there's nobody here in Orange County. I've already, when I first joined, the very night I joined about 3 weeks ago, it's either 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it could be 2 weeks ago. I apologize. I'd have to look at my records.
Well, look for Dave. Dave is one of the state coordinators.
I've spoken to Dave. He's not available much. He works a lot. And so I'm just trying to find...
Right. Well, he may be working a lot, but he is also extremely active. Believe me, every time I turn around, that guy's doing something. So he's doing a lot of work out there in California.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know he's got a sheriff's program going on out there, trying to make contact with sheriffs and do different things. And if you make contact with him, and eventually I'm sure, you know, he'll make a connection with you and try to get you into the group of people that are doing this. And when you contact the sheriffs, you know, do it with the group. You know, you're emotionally involved here, so you got to be careful. You don't want to directly go to your sheriff at this point in time, because right. I'm listening to your voice. I'm listening yeah. to your story. You're very emotionally involved, and that's not going to help you.
No, then I won't be contacting them, the OC sheriff. The other thing I have is...
But work with the people out there, if you can get to work with a few people, yeah. and just tell yeah, Dave, look, I'd like to contact...
I can talk to you guys later about that, but there's not an organized... I can talk about that later. The
yeah,
police,
but Dave can
way,
help you even though he's not in your county. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay? I understand that. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I've already spoken to him many, many times, but let's move forward. The police, by the way, have a YouTube videos on people that talk about common law and how to handle them. And basically, when I was stopped, and I wasn't even told any reason, I wasn't even stopped. I just pulled into a parking spot, and the police officer came up. And so I was then told I couldn't get out of the car. It was a pretty difficult. I won't go into all the details here, but suffice it to say that, you know, when he asked me for an ID, I said, what is there? Is there an emergency? You know, sir, may I help you? How can I help? And anyway, the whole thing came about. I said, well, you know, under common law, I need to know why you're stopping me, why you're asking me for my ID. And he said, 82, 82, into his phone. And there were six other police officers, three more cars that arrived, and I was surrounded. And then I was pulled out of my car and arrested. And so I think people need to really understand that, you know, how...
Well, you know what I do? Do you know what I do when I get pulled over by a cop?
What do you do?
Okay, because I have told the story anyway. But what I do is very simple. I call him, sir. I ask him, you know, what can I do for you, sir? And he tell me, well, do you know whatever? Usually it's for speeding. Do you know what how fast you were going and so on and so forth? He asked me for my license. I give it to him. I don't get involved in anything other than whatever he's interested in talking to me about. If I'm going to make a battle, I'm going to make my battle in the courtroom. I'm not going to make it there. So I never argue with a cop. I don't talk about common law. Because you're putting yourself into a situation, exactly what you just said. These cops are being misinformed, and they're being told that you are a dangerous person, and they look for keywords. And it's very interesting that they actually have a code for it now. And
yeah,
so he puts... Huh?
Yeah, I basically had diarrhea, and I had to go to the bathroom, and he wouldn't let me out. He pushed
the
door.
Well, I'll tell you, even when I'm done, I even thank the officer. I just want to be as polite as I can to him, because I'm not going to make a conflict on a road, especially a dark road on a country road or anything like that. But I want to tell you another thing. I would say half the time that I get stopped, they let me go.
Yeah, I want to say, though.
Because I'm just polite and nice to them. I'm not going to give them a hard time.
John, I wasn't anything but polite and nice. I just said, officer, I have to go to the bathroom. I really, really, and I went to get out three times. He just slammed his body into the door and wouldn't let me out. And I said, why are you letting me out? I need to go to the bathroom. He said, if you get out, I'll put handcuffs on you and, threatened me. And so while I tried to reach, I was scared. I was absolutely scared. And I heard him call for backup, 82, 82.
Yeah,
and,
but he did that 82 because you were questioning him back with the comment. You see, look, they don't want the resistance. Now, that's wrong, and
well,
we should be able to give them resistance.
I wasn't resisting, no a thing. I just asked the question, and then, he said, well, I have jurisdiction over you, and I said, well, I don't think you do under common law, but then he said, 82, 82.
Right. Look, I'm suggesting to everybody, people can talk to police officers however they want. That's their business. But I'm going to suggest to you just cooperate with them 100%. Don't bring anything up, because you're only opening up a can of worms for yourself and causing problems. I'd much rather be free and driving around and doing what I have to do than being in jail or spending a couple hours in jail or any of those things. I don't want to go through being arrested and handcuffed and all that stuff. And I know these people are being trained to respond to people in a certain way. I'm not going to give them a hard time. I'm going to give the judge a hard time.
Here, John, I want to say a couple of other things too quickly. I have friends of 20 and 30 years, and I know you're talking always about, that the people just don't know, and once they know, they'll be okay. But I saw something on television even the other day. It was the other night, last night or the night before, and it was called, I don't ever watch Forensic Files, but I was clicking through to find a movie just to relax.
Just to let you know, we're just about out of time, so try to make it quickly. Go ahead.
I know, I'm always the very last one, because basically I'm always disconnected, and then I have to go back in the queue, and I'm always last. And
okay,
I never have
finish up.
And if you could just not talk when I say, so just no generalizations, because I'm so totally worn out right now, I could cry. And I'm just trying to say that what they said is that people do not change. It was about basically all the females that are raped in college, and colleges are denying it. They don't want there to be known as the colleges that have rapes, and there's about 12 to 25 rapes per college at every college every year. But under the they're basically denying them, and they say that people do not what was in the attorney? I can't think of his name. I have it written down. He said that people do not change their belief system, but in a very, very difficult way. So if they believe in a system, or if they believe in the police, or if they believe in a doctor, if they believe in the court system or the judges, they will not change that belief without very, very much education. And I keep hearing you say, you know, that we're in a good place. And I really believe that, you know, it's wonderful things that are happening. But I think we can't be naive to the fact that even if we have 4,000 people, over 300 and whatever, 10, 20 million in the country, we need to really focus on making sure that we start waking up people. And my friends just call me crazy. And so, you know, because I'm saying that we all need to be educated. We need common law. And I was trying to read to my friend at lunch, you know, the Constitution booklet I have from you guys and the common law that Jan was really, really great and helped me out with. So, but he didn't want to hear any of it. So people really, truly are so overwhelmed in their lives. And I need to understand, you know, what is it that we're doing and I'm an international trainer. And, you know, my thought is, you know, maybe doing a weekly common law and a weekly constitution, you know, training so that people can truly, even if you give them a book or whatever, it's really helpful to go over these things, you know, like a teleseminar or something. And to really
Done a lot of those things, and we've done, we've got a civics course. We'll have a constitutional course coming up soon. We're writing a book for administrators, you know, we're doing a lot of stuff for education. Of course, we have tremendous amounts of readings up there. Our courtroom papers are an education in itself. Just studying and reading through our courtroom papers over and over again is
absolutely
an education. The
power
of the county sheriff.com, or go to our directory and click on the power of the sheriff, and you come down there and read everything on there. That is an education. The memos are an education. Everything in there. We got plenty of that stuff going on. And we've had conferences. We had weekend conferences. We go 2 weekends in a row. We had people coming to in the very early times trying to educate people.
Absolutely. I know you have lots and lots of education. And what I'm hearing from even people when I first got into NLA, when I found you guys 2 or 3 weeks ago, this today, Monday, I ended up going through and trying to find people in Orange County, and no one called me back in Orange County, by the way. 5 of them were not in service, and the other 4 never called back. And so, you know, I don't know if there's any people active in Orange County. I ended up reaching out to 4 other counties near me, and so I still only have, I think, was it like 2 calls back, and, you know, 4. So the interesting thing is the activity of people to go out and do something on their own, to learn on their own, to go somewhere is not very, very, I won't be the one, you know, to, like, in one day I went through 15 lessons of the civics course. But a lot of people don't do this. A lot of people don't go anywhere.
Well, you're right. Look at the nation's going to be saved on a skeleton crew. Nation was created on a skeleton crew. And let me tell you, you listen to Chief, Justice Story, and his quote, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase his quote, but he says, the ones that are going to win, it's not the war and the battles, but it's who shows up and who has more that shows up. And and believe me, we do have more to show up at the battles than they do. Okay, and that's why we're going to win. But we're not going to win this with millions of people. It's not going to happen. Millions of people will shuffle right behind us at some point in time, because this is really the salvation of America. But to get there, it's going to be done on a skeleton crew. It really is. I mean, considering that there are, you know, what, 300 plus million people in America, you know, it's going to be done on a skeleton crew compared to that.
Well, I think if there's a way, I mean, I don't even know how to approach my, I'm spending Christmas with my friend that just didn't want to even have me read anything to him. And he said, next thing you'll tell me that September 11th was an inside job. And I thought, well, gee, I don't know. I said, well, you know, if you want
to... Well,
that's a clue
not to bring it up to them, isn't it?
No, I said, you know, if you go to
someone,
NLA...
If someone told me that, I'm not going to talk to them about 7-11.
Yeah,
I mean, 9-11.
I just said, if you go to NLA, you know, website, then you'll be able to actually read the civics courses and look at the education and start learning. I said, just start learning, that's all. If you want the truth, you have to be willing to go, you know, learn it. Anyway, here's the other thing. What are the titles of the papers going to correspondence and miscellaneous files? What are the titles of those?
Oh, and in that case, I'm not sure exactly what went there. They might have sent our paper that we sent in recently, which was a court case that might have went to the miscellaneous file. But believe me, when the chief judge and the chief clerk actually get served and understands that it's a court case and that we've opened up a court of record and they have to answer a show cause, now it's going to have to go to a different place and they're going to have to deal with it. They certainly, it would be very dangerous for them at this point to try to send it back asking for money, because we told them that the law doesn't provide for that and that we get free justice. But, you know, that's just, and I'm not sure which papers went to that. It could have been the habeas corpus. I think it was the habeas corpus. Hold on a minute. Gerard, do you know what it was? Was it the habeas corpus?
You've said a lot of papers have gone to either correspondence or miscellaneous.
Well, no, not a lot. We hear some papers, and I don't know how many actually do, but we've heard that some papers have gone. And we've also heard from two different judges, again, that they're calling them correspondence. So that's their thing. If two judges are saying the same thing, they're communicating. And that might be the word that's going out. Let's just call it correspondence right now. We're going to figure another strategy later.
But we have to be aware that that's probably something that's going to be passed around, you know, even nationally.
Sure, of course. We understand that. We know that. We make adjustments as we move on. We understand what they're doing.
I understand. You've said this many. I'm just trying to make sure I focus in on giving feedback to things that have been said. And the judges that you're talking about, you're saying, are the federal judges, correct?
The one is a federal judge. The other one is on the state level. No,
okay.
Wait a second. Hold it. They both, I think, may have been on the federal level. I'm not sure. I know the one is with Jan's case. And again, I don't know what, I think it was the habeas corpus they were talking about on that.
Well,
not on the show cause that we just recently sent in. I don't think it was on that.
And there's only one federal judge for California, right, per state?
Oh, no. No, there's lots of federal judges in California. California's got, I think, four districts. And so each district has a whole bunch of judges in them. But there's only one chief judge per jurisdiction, per federal district. So if you've got four federal districts, there's four chief judges.
Got you. Okay, so those are the ones receiving the information that you're sending for education.
Those are the ones we're going after. They're the ones that are appointed by the sheriffs. They're responsible for the judges within their district. So we're going for them.
Okay, and my last question is, as far as my understanding, the sheriff is responsible for the way that the police treat people, right? I mean...
Well, the sheriff is responsible to make sure that the Constitution is upheld by the police departments, by the FBI, by the marshals, by any federal agents, by the IRS, anybody that's coming into their jurisdiction, which is their county.
They don't know that. How are we going to be... making sure that the police are not using brute force on people. I mean, here I am.
Well,
it's
an education, and again, it's going to take time. Listen, we're way out of time. We're 9 minutes past our time. Well, actually, because we should have 4 minutes, 5 minutes before. Almost 15 minutes.
Yeah, I know, but could I possibly not be last every time for the last 3 weeks? It's been 3 weeks.
Well, if you get in early,
I was in early. Being disconnected every single time.
Right. Well, I can't help that. That I can't help.
Gary made the call to try to get somebody that was not being heard, and you said, well, just go to the next caller. I was disconnected immediately.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you just didn't answer. I really don't know. Well, let me see. The only thing we could do, if we have a problem person, we put them on hold, and they'll put into a music with some really sick music. I mean, a room with some really sick music that you don't want to listen to. But it's really. But in any event, we never hardly. I don't think we've done it twice since we've been running this program. But.
Well, I can't believe we spent so much time with the guys talking about the bills. Okay, have a good night, everybody.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. All right, with that, we're going to end our evening. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, don't forget, we have the course going on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room. And also, we have Bible studies. We're doing the Harmony of the Gospels. So come meet the King on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.